We accept the reality of the world with which we're presented. It's as simple as that.
We no longer live in a world of nations and ideologies, Mr. Beale. The world is a business, Mr. Beale.
Go on without me. Just go!
A good soldier never leaves a man behind.
Because I wouldn't give you 2 cents for all your fancy rules if behind them they didn't have a little bit of plain, ordinary, everyday kindness.
Life, finds a way.
Welcome to Silver Screen Biases. Each week, we pick a movie off of IMDb's Top 250 and dig into it. We're examining truth claims in critically acclaimed movies while also examining our own biases. I'm Nelson.
This is Jeff.
And this week,
Snatch.
This episode is brought to you by our community on Patreon. They make this show happen, and you can help. Links to our Patreon and merchandise are in the show notes. Now back to the show.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Jeff.
Happy Valentine's. Valentine's Days.
Before we get started, actually, sorry, let's introduce our guest.
Oh, yeah, I was getting to that. Yeah. I was greeting you guys. I said guys.
I said hey.
Nelson, we have a guest today.
Yeah.
Cole.
Hi.
Cole Rice.
All three of
us. It's a Cole world out there.
Wow.
How are you related to J. Cole?
J. Cole, the rapper from the Carolinas? No.
You've never been to the
You know an awful lot about him for someone that's not related.
I do. Actually, I spent a summer at a camp, a KOA campground, and one of my employees is from North Carolina, and she was the biggest J. Cole fan I have ever met.
I thought J. Cole was a clothing brand.
No, that's J. Crew.
Which one has the pennies?
J.C. Penney's.
Jesus Christ pennies.
Jesus Christ pennies, yeah.
I think it's just her dad was just a potty mouth, like, Jesus Christ pennies.
Yeah. I'm going to start a clothing brand.
Jesus Christ Penny.
Honey, don't make it a brand. Just make it a department store. Well, Cole, we're glad to have you. You've been a long-time listener, first-time caller. How you been? What's going on? What's going on in the world, Cole?
Oh, the world of Cole? Not much, man. Just living life over here in...
Redacted.
Not going to dox myself and give you my address.
Because now I can't say we're neighbors.
Yes. Yes. But no, I'm good. Just living life with my wife and my child and trying to figure that out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, thanks for being here.
Yeah, glad to be here.
Thanks for stopping by. Nelson, we were talking about Snatch today. Man, it was good to catch up with Cole. He's such a good guy. You're still here.
I'm still here. Yeah.
Sometimes I feel like he's still here with us.
Oh, man. Yeah. Now, before we get too deep into the movie, you picked this movie.
I did.
Before we get to those reasons, which there'll be plenty of time to talk about, like, tell us a little bit about yourself. Before we get into our interview questions, like, why this movie? What do you have? Just tell us a little bit about Cole.
So, tell us about Cole or tell you
Cole
about why
and then,
this
like,
movie?
Kind of connected to okay. all of it.
Okay,
so it's a very specific, broad question.
Yeah, it's a very specific, broad question. Yeah, I'm a children's director at a church here where we live. Not going to dox us. I do that for a living. Moved here about 5 years ago from Toledo, Ohio. Yeah, I picked this movie because when I was roughly 18 years old, I really got into a big Guy Ritchie part of my life.
I love
and
his movies.
Started jumping in, and this ends up being, of all the ones I've seen, even the current ones, this is hands down my favorite. So, yeah.
Right on. Cool. I know this about you, so I'm just going to kind of prompt you. You used to have a podcast.
I used to be a part of one, yes. I did not run the podcast.
Did they kick you out?
No,
Did you get fired?
I stepped
Would
back.
Would you like to tell us, like, let's spill some tea.
Is it a still running podcast?
What really happened?
It is not a running podcast.
Oh, okay.
It ended back in about mid-2022.
Okay.
How many episodes?
We went for like 4 years and we would do probably 1 to 2 episodes a week. Whatever that is.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
What kind of content did you guys talk about?
5 minutes a piece?
Yeah. No.
5 minute episodes?
Yep. No, they were like hour and a half episodes.
Greetings to people.
We actually started
Good
off.
Morning.
We started off as a website first and we would review movies and TV shows as they came out, like on Netflix or at the, you know, different guys would take different things. Mine was Netflix. which was the hardest of all of them.
That's
because
so much content.
And exactly. So like the Sabrina, the TV show on Netflix that came out.
Melissa Joan Hart, yep.
Not that one.
Oh.
The darker one.
Oh, she was black.
Are you allowed to say darker?
I meant darker.
Cole, that's
in spirit.
Wildly inappropriate.
Got you.
Sorry.
You can't talk about black people as spiritual darkness, Cole.
Anyways. So I would get the hey, can you watch Sabrina and get back to us? Which was 10 hours of content.
Yeah. Was it as heavy? I've not watched it. Was it heavy? Everyone told me, like, yeah, it's heavy.
Definitely had some heavier tones to it, but it did try to have a comedic undertone, which did make it, to be honest, I did enjoy it.
Okay.
It
was spoiler alert, a good show. As a Christian.
Yes, as a Christian.
Like, was that because it deals probably a lot of demonic, satanic stuff? Like, was it heavy in that aspect?
Yes.
Okay. How's your heart now? No. Okay, cool.
It's a lot lighter.
I got a stint.
Yeah, so you guys talked about TV movies and stuff.
TV movies, music, yeah. And we would review it and give our little spiels and yeah.
This is one of the first things I knew about you when mm-hmm. when I met you back in the day.
What was the name of that podcast?
It had two names and I am blanking on any of them.
Is this why they fired you?
No. For me, it's been almost 3 years since.
Welcome back to the show. This is
If Adam and those guys and Matt and Aaron, and if they heard this podcast, they would be like, come on, Cole. Get it together. No, it's
what was the name of the website?
It's litreviews.com.
It's litreviews. Is the website still?
It is. Okay. It is. And we still have a Facebook page and we reach 6 people a week because I get the update every Friday.
Oh, man.
You guys are still sending out
updates.
I
wish we had that much reach.
We're not.
Oh, the updates are the
stats. Updates. Yeah. Facebook gives me updates every week and it's like, you've reached 6 people and it's reviews. And I'm like, great. We haven't had content in 4 years.
That's weird.
That's good growth. Or it's good maintaining.
Yeah.
We are putting out content and
yeah. Your numbers you're still pulling in better numbers than us. When we first started talking, Cole, and this was way before Nelson and I started talking about podcasting, you'd mentioned like you, and correct me if I'm wrong, this is what I'm remembering from our conversations.
Yeah.
You started to struggle enjoying movies outside of the podcast, and they became work.
It affected how you
viewed entertainment.
So
you started to get burned by it. Is that a good term?
So yeah, let me do a quick little rundown. So pre being married, little background here. At one point, I owned over 400 DVDs, and that's just movies. That doesn't include TV shows. And I used to have them in a bookcase on either side of my 32-inch widescreen flat screen TV in my apartment that I lived alone in because I. No one cared about that many movies, but I did. And so I used to watch movies. I can tell you the first DVD I was ever purchased and the first one I was ever gifted.
Don't tease us. What are they?
Braveheart was the gift. First movie I ever purchased was Gladiator when it came to DVDs.
We've done both of those.
Yeah.
You know that you could fit like all that on like a terabyte hard drive?
Yeah, you could fit. Actually, like you could fit 30 or 40 versions of each one of those on a terabyte hard drive.
All right,
I got a 4 terabyte for movies and an 8 terabyte for television.
I have 2 terabyte for movies and television.
There you go.
But those were all obtained legally.
And I own physical copies of all of that.
Yeah, same. I have the Blu-rays to back it up.
Mm-hmm.
Guys, we need to go to the police. Big movie file, cinephile, and stuff like in the deeper you got into podcasting.
The deeper
stuff,
I got into podcasting.
What started to happen?
Yeah, I would look at when I watched a movie. First of all, the response wasn't they give me an assignment to either watch a movie or a TV show. My first one would be like, okay.
You'd start to dread it.
I dread it. I would dread watching movies. And like for the life of me, there are times where I would sit down and watch a movie and I really wanted to, like, the part of me really wanted to watch it. But then the part of me that was had to sit down after I watched it and write a 2-page review or write notes as I'm watching it for the first time so that I can review it in our next podcast episode. It just became monotonous and boring. And I eventually just, after I stepped down, I didn't watch movies or really any new TV for about 6 months because I just, anytime I would watch something, I would immediately go into, let's pick it apart.
Right.
Let's find every little detail that this could be better or that could be better. And I couldn't watch it for what its initial, you know, from a entertainment point of view, if you talk to the director, well, this is entertainment wise, this is what I was trying to accomplish with this movie. And like looking at it from that perspective, I lost that. And I lost that joy that movies and TV brought for me when I was younger. And so I took a significant time away from watching new movies and new TV. Mm-hmm. And even now, it's hard for me to even like binge a TV show. I can probably name three shows that I've binged in the last 2 years.
Do it.
Reacher, first two seasons. This was after my dad showed me one episode over Christmas this year. I binged the first two seasons in less than a week. The last Stranger Things that came out, I binged that. Luckily, my wife hates scary stuff, so I don't have to wait for her. I can just keep going. Mm-hmm. And then the other one is Suits. But I had already seen most of that when it was live.
Just because you were curious who that Meghan Markle chick was that you kept hearing about?
I knew who she was before she was a princess. So
Suits just got a spinoff series.
Yeah.
Greenlit, yeah. I've been eager to get you on just because, like, that was one of your hesitations. Like,
it actually we had the conversation. Inspired a rule that we created for ourselves for this show, which is
don't touch each other while we're on the air.
We keep doing this until it's not fun.
Yeah.
That's what ended up being, as I probably went a year longer than I should have with it. Mm-hmm. And it's just because it was me and like five of my guys, my buddies, you know, that I had known for years.
Yeah.
And we decided we were going to start this review business. And the goal at the time when we started it, we wanted to be the next Rotten Tomatoes. We wanted to blow Rotten Tomatoes. Never did that. But we wanted to be that. And we worked really, really hard to try to do that. And we got a pretty good following on Facebook. But yeah, I went a little longer than I should have and burned me out for movies and TV.
Mm-hmm. Let's get into some of these interview questions then, and we can continue to pick through that and as we get deeper here. So Cole, you listened to I love multiple episodes, so you know where this is going. How would you describe yourself politically? What are your political biases?
So I don't really have a ton of political biases. I try to stay, and this is going to kill Nelson probably. I'm pretty centric.
I've been trying to do that for the last 56
I'm pretty centric. I don't try not to lean left or right. I know maybe it doesn't mess with you. You're a libertarian and
finish your statement, left or right. And then we'll find out.
Yeah. No, I'm pretty centric on things. I try to keep a level head and try not to fall for the media craziness that is stuff and try to look at it from all angles before I make my own decisions.
Between that and losing weight, those are both far right extremist behavior that I've been told. So,
what?
Yeah.
Far right to be a centrist?
No. To not buy into media narratives.
I hate any media narratives.
And to lose weight and try and be physically healthy. Those are both behaviors of far-right extremists.
Both are really hard to do on a consistent basis, trust me. Yes.
Okay. All right. What's your religious biases?
I'm a Christian. Have been for 20 years now.
But you are older than 20.
I am. I am 38 years old.
So what? Yeah. Tell us a bit about those first 18 years. What were you then?
I was...
Anything that's legally able to air.
Hindu.
No, so my mom is Catholic and my dad is Protestant. And so I grew up in a split household in the sense that I went to Catholic school till I was in fourth grade. My grandma on my mom's side and my grandpa are staunch Irish Catholics.
Nice.
A lot of drinking. At my grandfather's wake, he requested two kegs of Guinness for the kids. So my mom's Catholic. My mom was Catholic. My dad was Protestant. And so there was always that little bit of a tension in the household. My mom and I and my sister would go to Catholic Mass every single Sunday. But I was already in Catholic school and heard the same Mass Sunday that I heard Friday at school and didn't really want to do it. And my dad would only go to church on Christmas and Easter. So he was a creaster. And so...
Protestant.
Yes. Pretty devout, yes.
Christian school or Catholic school and Catholic Mass.
Yeah.
Was oversaturation like real for you? Like, was it just too much? And so it was like so much like you wanted to purge it all or like...
No, I stepped away because none of it made sense.
Okay.
Like, so... The hard difference between Catholicism and Protestantism, besides the worship
theology,
whatever, besides the theological difference that the Catholics worship Mary, and there's a lot of other things that they do, like with for confession, you have to go to the priest because the priest is the middleman between God and you. Whereas in Protestant, there's a lot more conversation about who Jesus was and Jesus's life on earth and how you can ever relationship with him. I didn't even know that I could do that until I was 18 years old. Someone explained it to me. I was like, what? That's a thing? You could do that? I would talk to a priest before I talk to Jesus?
Go right to him?
I can go right to him. And they're like, yeah, so you can do that. And so about 16, 17, I just told my mom, I was like,
the year 16, 17?
I was, yeah.
How old are you?
100. I'm just kidding. About 16, 17 years old, I told my mom, I was like, hey, I'm not going to go to church anymore. And so we've had this conversation. She reluctantly said, okay, because she said, you know, in my eyes, your father and I had raised you and influenced you the best we could. And we knew that if we forced you to do this, it wouldn't be yours, regardless of what you found spiritually for yourself. And so your dad was on board with it because he didn't go anyways. And I had to get on board with it because I was like, well, I've influenced him the best I can. I need him to figure it out for himself. This needs to be his spiritual walk. This needs to be his relationship with whatever he figures it to be. And so she let me walk away. and so then, I had a friend that I went to high school with, who is still a friend today, lives out in Utah. He's a pilot. And we played tennis together as a big guy. Back then I was even bigger, but I played 3 years of varsity tennis. And got a call one day. I was at work and his little brother, who was 14 at the time, 15, was in a car accident and passed away. We went to, I went to his funeral. I was going to support my friend Mark in any way I could. At the time, wasn't going to church, you know, spiritual thing wasn't a part of my life. But I was going to support Mark in whatever he needed. And so we went to his funeral and showing, and there was like 500 people at this 15-year-old kid showing. And I had met his brother, Ryan, one time at a party in high school. And Mark knows this, so I can say it on microphone. I got his brother to drink his first beer at the ripe old age of like 14. Not proud of it. Didn't realize who he was when it all happened. But anyways, But 500 people at a showing. I mean, line out the door. It is snowing and sleeting outside. And it is horrible weather. And it's just for hours, hours on end, people come. And people kept, you know, I was like, so tell me about Ryan. Tell me about, and I'm like, oh yeah, he's a youth group and he goes on missions trips. And he just has this heart for the Lord. And I'm like, what does that even mean? What do you mean he has a heart for the Lord?
Like Mary?
He's got a heart for Jesus? What is a heart for Jesus? And so I decided like 2 weeks later, all my friends that Mark and a couple other friends of mine that I had known through high school went to this church called Crossroads Community Church, and no one invited me. I just showed up. I was like, okay, if 500 people come to this kid's funeral and is showing, and he has this relationship with this Jesus guy. I mean, I know who Jesus is because I'm, you know, confirmed. If I wanted to get married, I can get married in a Catholic church. I'm confirmed Catholic in their sacraments. I know who Jesus is, but the Jesus I grew up with is not the Jesus that people keep telling me about. And so I'm like, I gotta know who this kid is and or know who this Jesus is from what this kid's done. And I started going to church for 6 months, three services a Sunday, every Sunday. I'd sit with three different families every single Sunday in first, second, and third service.
Did you hear the same sermon three times?
I heard the same sermon three times. I talked to mostly the same people because, but we'd rotate people in and out, but I couldn't get enough. And all of a sudden I learned who this Jesus person was. And I said, I want that. That makes sense to me. Let's see what this is all about. And that's the quick version of going to church and on Easter Sunday. It wasn't Easter. Easter Sunday when I was 19 was the first time my dad had gone back to church since before I was born, which was a whole nother story. But there was a Sunday when this is the late 90s, early 2000s. So when we talk about sermon presentations, we talk about going hardcore in our sermon presentations. The pastor, Doug Langford, I doubt he's here this, but he lives in Buffalo, New York. Shout out to Buffalo.
The whole city.
Whole city.
What's up? Niagara, my friends.
Doug was a runner.
Rum runner?
Rum runner, yeah. No, I'm pretty sure he was not a rum runner. But Doug was a runner, and he decided for his message on running from Jesus, he would do his entire message on a treadmill for the entire hour.
Dear God.
Well, how many
three services?
Three services?
Three services.
So he did it three times.
He did it three times for the entire hour. Running at a pace just above a jog. So we're talking,
how many miles did he cover that Sunday?
I don't know, man, but he was going hard, and whatever that message was supposed to be, it hit me. You know, he got off
the sweat off his brow.
Yes.
Was it like, was this a physical example of running from Christ, or was it like where Paul talks about running a race with integrity?
No, it was a physical running away from Christ.
Wow. And was there a cross behind him?
Let me think through that sanctuary. Yeah, there was.
Perfect.
There
was.
Yeah, what were you wearing?
I don't remember. I just remember him getting off.
Sounds faulty.
Just covered in sweat.
He was covered in sweat. Gets off the treadmill and he's like, and it's his first service, and he's like, you gotta, you feel like you've been running and you're running and you're running, and Jesus is so far away from you, and you look back and he's just this little speck. But you got to bend down and catch your breath, and you catch your breath, and you look up and he's right there and he's waiting for you. And he's like, what are you running from? Why are you running from me? And in that moment, I'm like, what am I running from? Why am I running from him? And I jumped right in.
Nice.
And yeah, the rest is history.
Awesome. Yeah,
thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
I think that's our first testimony.
Yeah, you did get most of my testimony.
We'll probably cut it all.
Yeah. Comfort time.
Perfectly fine. It wasn't even that good.
Yeah. We've heard way better. And those didn't even make it. Last question here. What's your favorite movies? As someone who you've been in the cinema lifestyle.
Cinnabon lifestyle.
I'm assuming you've probably ranked some of your films.
I have.
Do you have a number one?
My number
one. Are you on Letterboxd?
What?
Are you on Letterboxd?
No, he's on a office chair.
It's social media just for keeping track of movies.
No, I didn't even know that existed.
Paid sponsors it.
All right, send me a link, yeah. It became hard for me. When you own 300, 400 movies, it's really hard to go, these are my top three.
Right.
It usually becomes of, these are my top three in this genre, categorical genre. Some of my favorites are very different across the board. That's so great. Like if we're looking at like action and drama movies, I know Braveheart and Gladiator were some of my first movies, but they were some of my favorite movies. Mm-hmm. Saving Private Ryan is one of my favorite movies. The Sandlot is hands down.
The Colossus of Clown.
Colossus of Clown.
The Great Bambino. Yeah fantastic.
That one, I really, really enjoy Christmas Vacation.
Chevy Chase, classic.
The Christmas Story. And I.
Oh, yeah. Have you seen the sequel to that? I've still not watched the sequel to A Christmas Story.
There's no such thing as a sequel.
No,
to
it
the
exists.
Christmas Story. I know it does exist. It doesn't mean that it exists in my life.
Have you seen it?
No.
Okay.
I would never watch that.
It's so good you haven't watched it.
Yeah.
So bad I never even watched it.
Okay. Do you have a favorite director or a favorite, favorite director or favorite producer or someone that like you constantly like.
So movies of these directors that I don't miss, David Fincher and Christopher Nolan. I just love the way Fincher shoots.
Mm-hmm. He's got, there's a rumor he's going to be directing. I can't remember enough of it. Some adaptation. It looked exciting. And David Fincher is doing the adaptation.
All I know is I am mesmerized by his movies because of the cinematography and the way he sets scenes and goes from person to person, and how the story is played within the scenes just blows my mind. And then for Christopher Nolan, it is his storytelling ability.
Mm.
It's layered across all movies that he does within the movie, within the scenes, there's stories and there's things. And it's a deep storytelling that a lot of directors just miss.
Mm-hmm.
When he came out with Inception, or not Inception, when he came out with...
That was Nolan.
That was Nolan. Interstellar.
Also Nolan.
Yeah, I know. When Nolan came out with Interstellar,
yes.
I went and saw that in the movie theater 10 times.
So good.
And to me, a movie is beyond just the writing, the directing, the acting.
It's the culmination.
It's everything. If you have a horrible soundtrack, but everything else is great, it's not a good movie.
Hans Zimmer, man.
Hans Zimmer.
Clutch.
Coming in with the...
Clutch.
With the... If, I mean, how could you know that he was going to come in with that organ music and just... I remember when I first heard it, I was like, that dude's playing an organ right now. There's no way this is going to be good.
Interstellar's my man.
Interstellar just...
And Christopher Nolan partners himself with good composers. Like Ludwig's incredible too.
Yes.
Not Beethoven.
I know what you mean. Grogensnagen. Ludwig von Mises.
Grogensnagen.
Gorgsnagen.
Yeah.
Yeah, no... Christopher Nolan, like, and I agree. It's the whole package that Nolan puts together.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Also, anything else within the cinema category you'd like to add before we move on?
I just I can't believe I forgot to say this was one of my favorite movies, and so I'm going to give it a shout out because it's due, and that is Shawshank Redemption. Sorry.
It's the number one on the top 250, has been for a very, very long time.
That is my number one.
I arguably could tell you it's my number one movie. I'm not going to definitively say that right now on camera.
Say it.
I'm not going to.
Say it.
I can't.
You heard it here, guys.
It will be on his letterbox in the future once he starts.
It will, after I start putting things on.
We're going to quote you as
you
saying
can't. You want to bring it back up and go through my list? We can do that, but...
we'll probably have you on again.
Okay.
Maybe. I don't know. We'll see. Okay. Well, thank you for sharing.
Depending on how well this goes, we might have you on a third time.
All right. You picked this movie, Cole.
I did.
We give our guests... I don't say this every episode. Our guests that come on, if... Sometimes we let them pick, like if there's a movie that's on the top 250 that they attach to.
Yeah.
Sometimes we bring a guest on because of a movie we specifically want a guest for. This one, you looked at the list and you said Snatch. There's a couple others. We're not going to get to those. There's a couple other you've put your name on, you've dibbed, that we'll have you back eventually.
Yeah.
But Snatch.
If this goes well.
Why Snatch?
So this Snatch came out in 2000.
Easy. That's one of my facts.
Sorry, but
say something else.
And in America,
the
they were actually going
to, I had to say about the movie.
And they were going to put an apostrophe D on it in America and call it Snatched. But that did not happen.
Why were they going to change it, Cole? Do you know this fact?
I actually don't.
Okay. This is according to IMDb. So this is not something I just had.
I think I know.
A snatch.
I know what it is.
In Europe is another name for a female anatomical body part.
Yeah. In America as well.
Across the world.
Okay, I didn't know it was America. IMDb specifically said Europe, so I didn't know it was also America, because I've never heard of that referred to as a snatch.
In my 18 years prior to Jesus, that word was used around me before.
I'm probably going to cut this, but you know how like you have like a herd of cattle, all right? You have a murder of crows. A miracle of unicorns.
Gaggle of geese.
A snatch of crabs.
Snatch came out in 2000?
2000.
Oh, did you have more?
No, it was the reason I picked it, though. So it came out in 2000, and I was an impressionable 15, 16-year-old kid in 2000. When I watched this movie, it was the first time I'd ever seen a movie that was just very... I'm going to take more of your stuff here. I look at it as more of a crime thriller drama comedy altogether, and it's very chaotic.
It's a dark comedy for sure.
It's very dark, yeah. But it's also very chaotic. It's shot in so many different angles and from different points of view and from close-ups to all of a sudden you're really far back and then you're really close and then you're at this like 45 degree angle and you're
it
like
is some cool transitions.
It's
and
very
stuff,
confusing and very weird, and I loved every second of it when I first saw it, and it became an instant classic of my life, and I bought it as soon as I could find it.
You've obviously seen this before. Nelson, was this your first time viewing it?
No. Okay. I've seen every single Guy Ritchie movie several times.
Okay. This was my first time. I have seen, and I'll get into some more of his catalog, but I've seen both Sherlock's with Robert Downey Jr. I've seen those.
Mm-hmm. You know Robert Downey Jr.?
Yeah, I watched him. I watched the films with Robert.
That's incredible. Together.
He was actually in the film too. And I also saw the live action Aladdin, which he also, which was very, now knowing like the types of like, no, I didn't mind it.
It's very out of the box.
It's a good, I thought it was a great interpretation. I thought it was a great interpretation, but that'd be a weird one. That'd be a weird director attached to that film.
Basically, anything that he's made
that isn't
his idea. Taika Waititi, for example, will do one for me, one for them kind of thing.
Yeah.
Except for the Sherlock Holmes movies, everything he's made that wasn't like a London crime movie, it sucks.
He's really good at London crime movies.
What else has he done that's sucked? In your opinion, no.
So I thought that Aladdin live action was really disappointing.
Okay.
Both because I thought it was like a bad bad version of it.
Okay.
And also it was a bad guy, like it was bad for Guy Ritchie.
Okay.
He did a King Arthur movie that sucked.
That was not good.
He did
Man from U.N.C.L.E.?
Man from U.N.C.L.E. sucked.
Okay, because that's not a British crime.
It wasn't a Guy Ritchie British crime.
Gotcha. Okay.
Did he do Robin Hood?
No.
No.
That was Taron Egerton and Jamie Foxx. That sucked too. Gosh.
Okay. So. Okay.
Hold on, real quick though, because you mentioned Snatch's 2001.
2000.
Yeah. 2000. Sorry. Have you seen or had you already seen by this point Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, his 1998 movie?
I had not. This was my first Guy Ritchie movie that I had seen. I like this better than Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels.
I agree.
Is Lock, Stock's on the top 250,
it is.
Right?
Yeah.
So we'll get to. I've not seen that
movie. I think my favorite Guy Ritchie movie is probably The Gentleman.
The Gentleman's so good.
It's incredibly good.
Is that a newer one?
That's a very new one. Okay. But I think Snatch is a more like iconic movie.
Like a 100%, like this is a quintessential Guy Ritchie.
I think The Gentleman is too. And I think it's more polished. And Snatch is pretty.
It's rough around the edges.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it succeeds because of it.
I didn't know what to expect. So when it first started, and this is in my Letterboxd review too, I love the Ocean's movies, Ocean's 11, 12, and 13. Mm-hmm. I think they're great. When this first started, with the way the music was playing and some of the editing, it's like the casual talking while crime's going on, I was like, this feels like, I don't know who directed those. I probably should. Like,
Steven Soderbergh.
Okay. Yeah, okay, yeah. I was immediately into this. I'm like, okay, if it's this kind of vibe, I'm into this. It slowly then started to part ways.
Yeah.
So in my letterbox analysis,
would you like me to read it?
It's way more. Well,
I don't need. I'm just gonna say the one thing. I don't need the whole thing to say. Like, but just like I said, if Fight Club and the Ocean's trilogy had a baby, and for me, like, and I say that in a positive way, because I'm okay with Fight Club. I love the Ocean's trilogy, and this was like the best parts of both of those that came together and make a film. Because like there were some things in Fight Club I didn't like. This movie didn't have those things. Okay. It wasn't as dark as Fight Club.
No, it didn't. It's not even close to what Fight Club's undertones are.
My Letterboxd review for this was much shorter than Jeff's, which is just that rascal Brad Pitt.
So
what a scamp.
This movie runs at about an hour and 42 minutes, directed by Guy Ritchie, a European, specifically United Kingdom director. It's rated R. We already talked about some of his films, Aladdin, King Arthur, The Man from U.N.C.L.E., UNCLE, Sherlock's 1 and 2, Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. I want to talk about, there was one I had noted.
Can we talk about his good movies, though?
Yeah.
You just listed all of his trash
movies. But like in previous episodes?
Yeah, I know what you mean, though.
In previous episodes, I only listen to the ones that are notable to me. Yeah. I don't know every producer or director's catalog.
Yeah.
Well, so these are the ones that I've heard of.
What it says known for.
Right, but that doesn't mean they're good.
What is the four things that says IMDb says he's known for?
I have no idea. I didn't look. I just went through his catalog and said the things that I'm familiar with.
Snatch.
Okay. Anyways, there was one I wanted to talk about in his upcoming filmography, director.
So I got to say this, and his known for number four is Aladdin, and that disappoints me. Because Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels should be attached. There.
It's Sherlock Holmes, Lock, Stock, Snatch, and Aladdin.
Okay.
Those are not his best films.
Those are not his best films.
I think Sherlock Holmes was really, really well done.
Both Sherlocks are great.
Yeah. Really, really well done.
Not compared to Snatch, they're not like iconic Snatch.
It's
like Guy Ritchie.
It's not great, an iconic Guy Ritchie, well, but I think some of his like quick camera cuts and like the way he does like fights and stuff, I think comes through in Sherlock.
He is attached to a second Aladdin.
Yeah,
I just want you to get like
of his recent stuff, like his most recent movies. You see, King Arthur, Legend of the Sword, sucked. Aladdin sucked. Gentleman, excellent. Wrath of Man sucked. Operation Fortune really sucked. The Covenant is 7.5 stars. I haven't seen it yet. I hear it's really excellent.
That is on my list of things to watch. I just don't have as much time as I once did.
Yeah.
So yeah, I just. You said The Gentleman's already out, right? Because IMDb has it as upcoming. 100%. Okay, IMDb has it as still upcoming. And
it's been out for a couple of years.
Yeah, it came out in 2019.
Is there a sequel coming out to it then?
Perhaps.
It could be.
As much as I love Guy Ritchie movies, like a lot of his movies kind of like it's a coin toss whether it's going to be a good movie or a bad movie.
There's a TV series.
But the good ones are really, really good.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'd say his good ones are really, really good. And they usually, when I watch them, are very memorable, like The Gentleman.
Yeah.
But then, so I might be of the minority in this group, but I did not like the Sherlock Holmes movies.
Really?
Okay.
For what reason? If you can pinpoint it.
I can pinpoint it. And it's not anything to do with Guy Ritchie. It has everything to do with Robert Downey Jr.
Really?
I thought he overacted his mind out of those two
movies.
He did
overact in that
movie. It took me away from the actual story.
So you wanted more of a realistic...
Because one else in that entire movie, Jude Law, any other people in that movie, Mark Strong, none of them were over the top.
No.
And at no point, I've read the Sherlock Holmes books. Sherlock Holmes is very eccentric, but he's not over the top. Like the way that Robert Downey Jr.
foppish.
Yeah. And so for me, because Robert Downey Jr. was so out there in comparison to the other characters, it just pulled me away from the bigger story.
Did you watch the BBC Sherlock?
Yes.
Would you say it's better?
I like that better. I don't exactly love it. Who
is that? Is that Martin Freeman?
No, it's...
Someone... There's notable characters. And Benedict Cumberbatch?
I think it's so, Benedict Cumberbatch, yeah.
Morgan Freeman and Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yeah, okay. And I think that one's better, but I have yet to find a Sherlock Holmes movie series that I love.
What'd you think about Enola Holmes while we're on the topic of Netflix? I haven't seen the second one yet.
It was fine. I watched it. Anna and I watched it. My wife watched it, and
it's cute.
It was fine. It was cute. Yeah.
Millie Bobby Brown, the hip hop artist. A couple movies we've done that have come out around the same time as this. 1999 was Fight Club. So just a year previous, Brad Pitt had done Fight Club. In 2000 was Gladiator, which is the same year as this movie. And then 2001 was Spirited Away. Those are all movies we've covered previously. Links below, or just check our catalog. Nelson, was this movie, I think I know the answer to this, was this movie based on a book or any sort of preconceived writing, or was this a full legitimate project from the very beginning of Guy Ritchie? And
Guy Ritchie created the idea for the movie, wrote the screenplay, directed, and then also the TV show that spun off of it.
Mm-hmm.
Earlier you mentioned the Gentleman TV show that is a spinoff of the movie he did as
same
well.
Same universe?
I don't believe so. I think they even have crossover actors.
Okay.
I'll look that up right now.
Okay. While you're looking that up, I'll move forward here. And again, as previous episodes, if there's any cast in this movie that you guys noted that I missed, let me know. But these are the ones that stood out to me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't go through the whole movie, every single cast. So Jason Statham, obviously, he's a UK actor. He's big. He's multiple Fast and Furious films. He just has most recently in The Beekeeper. He's in all the Expendables movies with Stallone. He was in Meg 1 and 2, which Meg 1 was enjoyable. It was cheesy, but I loved it. Mm-hmm. Either of you guys saw Meg 1? It's just a fun movie.
It's fine.
It wasn't Jaws, but it wasn't meant to be. It was more over the top. So anyways, but yeah, so Jason Statham.
The just real quick.
The connection.
Snatch movie TV show.
No, Gentlemen.
Well, Snatch movie TV show. It's I've watched the show. It's unclear if it's the same universe. No crossover actors. Snatch and Gentlemen. It's got a handful of, no, actually, it looks like all the crossover is electrical, transportation, art department, stunts, casting director, and director. So they could be in the same universe, but it's not.
So there's a Snatch TV show?
Yeah. Also by Guy Ritchie.
Yep. I did not know this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. When did that come out?
I think it's 2012 to 15.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Rupert Grint is the main character.
Oh, okay. And then there's also a Gentleman movie and a Gentleman TV show.
It's coming out in 24, yes.
Yeah.
Okay, the TV show's okay. I didn't realize, I was talking about the Gentleman and then I saw there was a series. I didn't realize there was a Snatch series as well.
Yeah, I said it earlier and you said, is it the same universe?
I thought we were talking about the Gentleman because I knew the Gentleman.
Yeah, both.
Yeah, I know Snatch and the Gentleman are separate universes. I didn't know if the movie and the series shared the same world.
Oh.
Does the Snatch movie and the Snatch series share the same world? Or is it like...
It could, but it doesn't have to.
It's like Fargo?
Yeah. No, actually, with Fargo, they absolutely directly do. It's like...
So how is it still Snatch, even if it's not connected to Snatch at all?
So with Fargo, it's all absolutely in the same world series. Because there's crossover characters and
we've talked about that before.
Snatch, it's like... If it could be in the same world, if it doesn't, nothing changes. Whereas Fargo, if it's not in the same world, that actually does have consequences.
Okay.
It's not an anthology show because the first two seasons have to do with each other.
Okay.
But it's more like taking the themes and ideas and stuff within the movie and spinning that into a TV show.
Okay.
Yeah, because there's no crossover characters that I can... I'm looking out here. I don't see anything.
IMDb has a collaboration search, so you can put in the two different shows,
there
and it'll give you a list of everybody that worked on both.
Brad Pitt was in this, obviously. Bullet Train, and he's got a huge roster.
We can spend all night on that roster.
Ocean's movies, Fight Club, Seven.
I think Bullet Train's the one he's best known for, though.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, that's
Bullet Train's
I watched that recently.
It's his most recent one. I do love that's that. Why I had that on the list.
Okay.
Not because it was the most iconic.
I know, I'm just
busting your chops. I go chronologically in his releases.
I know.
The first one I mentioned is always the most recent.
Just busting your chops. I watched it recently. It's
I've not seen it.
It's fun.
It is very fun.
Benicio del Toro, obviously another
I've
huge...
always thought that he looks like Brad Pitt, and then when you see them in a movie together, you're like...
Nothing.
They don't
nothing
look... alike. They don't look alike.
The Avengers, the Guardians movies was my first Benicio
del Toro
introduction, yeah.
I definitely saw this before I saw Guardians, but...
This was my first Benicio.
Yeah.
Real
Dennis,
quick, actually, sorry, because you've gone through some actors, and I was looking up the same universe stuff real for
yes.
you.
Yes.
Jason Statham, we're going to see him again in Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Alan Ford, we're going to see him again in Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels.
Yep.
Brad Pitt, we'll see him again in 12 Years a Slave, Inglourious Bastards. We already saw him in Fight Club in 7. Benicio del Toro, we're going to see again in The Usual Suspects. But I thought like that's the only other thing he's in the top 250. But something that stuck out to me that I didn't know is that he was in License to Kill, which is not in the top 250. And then I kind of went down a rabbit hole here. Only one James Bond movie has ever been in the top 250, and none of them are right now. Casino Royale with Daniel Craig was.
Interesting.
So this whole time you were giving me this look like...
No, I
Nelson, you interrupted.
It's good, no. Dennis Farina is in this movie.
Saving Private Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
New Girl.
Oh, really?
Nick Miller's dad.
Oh, yeah. Yes, he is Nick Miller's dad.
Well, we saw him in Saving
Pop,
Private
Pop.
Ryan.
Yeah.
Yeah, correct. But he's Nick Miller's dad forever and for always. And the last person I recognized was Lenny James. I know him from The Walking Dead and Fear the Walking Dead, but he's probably in some other stuff. But,
I didn't have
any other cast members that you guys.
Vinny Jones,
yes,
is one of. He was in Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels.
Yeah, we'll see him again. Then.
But he's played little roles. He was in X-Men.
He was in Gone 60 Seconds.
He's been in a lot of things. He plays a lot.
Hold on. You said he was in X-Men. What's his line?
I don't actually know.
I'm the Juggernaut.
Oh yeah, like, I forgot about that. That is, he is the Juggernaut. Yeah. He's also done like NCIS Los Angeles. Like he plays little roles in a lot of things.
Yeah.
And yeah.
This movie has 8.2.
Hold on. You said other people.
Right.
So, yeah.
Okay.
Raid Surbejaya. I can't pronounce his name. He was in Batman.
Boris the Blade.
Huh?
Boris the Blade. Can we just call him Boris?
Boris the Blade. We'll see him again in Batman Begins. Jason Fleming.
Yep.
He was the, I'm going to use this term because it's in the movie, but I understand it's not the right term, but I don't know the right one. He was the pikey with a mullet. That's Jason Fleming. He's in Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. Then Ewan Bremner, who played the character Mullet, the guy whose head gets stuck in a window as Tony drives. We'll see him again in Trainspotting, which you're really going to dislike.
One and two.
You're gonna really hate Trainspotting. Charles Cork was another one of the Stooges. We'll see him in V for Vendetta. And Saoirse Cusack, which is the pikey Brad Pitt's mother in the movie.
Love her.
That's the wife of Jeremy Irons.
In real life?
In real life.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Just his acting wife.
Hey.
That's it. That's all I got for you for actors. You can go back to the theater.
I was just going to talk about Vinnie Jones.
Yeah, tell me more about Vinnie Jones.
That's all I got. No, I already talked to him. That's the only guy I was going to really say.
He's the juggernaut.
He is the juggernaut.
You all right, Jeff?
8.2 out of 10 on the IMDb. Currently, as we're recording this episode, it stands at 122 on the top 250.
Yeah.
Does this movie have history on the top 250?
Yes, of course. It debuted at 183 in January 2001. It climbed to 139 by June of 2001. It fell consistently to its bottom of 249 in May of 2005 and has climbed consistently to its peak of 90 in July 2014 and then the slow slide to its current position. So it's once it came on the top 250,
it stayed.
It nearly fell off. In May of 2005, it fell down to 249, but it rallied.
It rallied. That's what we say around here.
It rallied.
Rotten Tomatoes. This may be one of the lowest Rotten Tomatoes we've seen. 74%.
Is that critics or people?
That's the tomato meter. So that's critics.
Okay.
The audience is 93%.
Yeah. There you go. That's all I need to know.
Yeah.
Did this movie have a budget?
Yeah, $10 million, which is 18 today.
Okay.
Yeah. And do you know why it's 18 today? Do you know why it's 18 today instead of just 10?
Brad Pitt? His cost went up?
No. Yep, no, that's actually, yeah, all million. Of inflation
all
is
inflation,
caused by Brad Pitt.
Brad Pitt, yeah. Just Brad Pitt.
Brad Pitt's printing money.
Brad Pitt's
got
on
a
the
printing
money
press.
Printer.
Yeah.
This whole time.
This whole time.
Peanut Gallery?
Yeah, so according to our Peanut Gallery, no comments, but they did say a conclusive majority said that it would not be in their top 250.
Oh, it would not be.
They're wrong.
Conclusive?
Oh, it would be in the top 250?
No, I'm saying they're wrong. It would be whatever.
You're going to get some hate mail. Cool.
I don't care. Nobody has my email address.
They will after this episode.
I'm pretty sure that everybody in our Patreon knows us personally.
We're going to link this.
Listen, everyone in the Patreon, you don't email me. Don't at me, bro.
You can find him at 115.
At church on Sunday.
Well, I've been doxxed.
All right, guys. Well, we've made it to the deep part, the Johnny Deep of this movie. As we like to say here, we say it all the time.
Yeah.
Don't go back.
That old chestnut.
Trying to find it. This movie, I'll start far as like Bison's. I struggled with this already.
Yeah. Was there a name drop in this movie, Jeff?
I actually have something about that. I don't have that wrote down. I rely on you for that one.
At 28 minutes and 30 seconds, dog taking a squeaky toy in the small car after they back into Benicio del Toro's van before he swallows the squeaky toy. The driver says, "Oi, don't snatch." Yeah, name drop.
Yep. I did notice that last night, and I kind of chuckled.
They said the thing.
That's why I was going to, I had that one.
Tyrone is the character.
When I was younger,
thought he was Biggie Smalls. I'm like, it's Biggie Smalls, I know it.
It's racial profiling.
No, it's sizism.
Sizism.
That's right. Different.
Biggie Smalls was already dead by that point.
I know
right?
he was. That was the thing. I'm like, there's no way,
well,
but it looks...
air quotes dead. He's dead.
No, he's on an Tupac. Island in the Caribbean with Tupac.
With Tupac.
Yeah, together.
And Michael Jackson.
And Elvis.
And Steve Jobs.
Yeah. Steve Jobs isn't dead.
That's what he said.
Right, but Steve Jobs... he died?
A while
Did
ago.
Steve Jobs die?
Are you joking right
they
now?
They keep making iPhones, though. Yeah.
Tim Apple's got that taken care of.
Tim Apple?
His last name's Apple?
Wow, what are the odds?
Man, I guess.
That's it was meant to be.
I enjoyed this movie. I had a hard time following parts of it because it does move quick.
Yeah, and they speak a foreign language.
Brad Pitt is almost undiscernible.
No, he's not.
He sounds...
I watched it with subtitles. I'm saying I followed it, but at the same time, like... they gave him that accent because he couldn't do a British accent. So, like, it was intentional. But like,
can I give you a funny little thing?
They gave
him
a pikey accent because he couldn't do a British accent?
Yeah, he couldn't do a British accent, so they had
and
to make him play the
They
song.
Already had... He called Guy Ritchie and said, "Hey, do you have a movie and a role for me?" And they're like... And Guy Ritchie was like... this is in the DVD bonus scenes and stuff you can find on YouTube. Guy Ritchie's like, "Yeah, of course we do." And then hangs up the phone with Brad Pitt and goes, "I need to write him in." So... writes Brad Pitt in, and then in the character that he ends up writing ends up becoming one of the main focal points of the movie. Mm-hmm. So the movie was already pretty much done before Brad Pitt was attached to it, and then they revamped everything.
Wow. I can't even imagine, like, this movie.
He was the last addition before.
Dramatically different without that character.
And he was hesitant to do it because he had just done a boxing movie or a fighting movie.
Fight Club, yeah.
Just the year before and stuff. And so there was some hesitation, but he's like, "If I want to be in a Guy Ritchie movie, I got to do it." But, yeah. But like, anyways, I
wanted to say real quick though about his accent though. It sounds exactly like a Newfie accent, like far East Coast Canada. There's an island, Newfoundland,
yeah,
and they have a very distinct accent, and it sounds pretty darn close to what he's.
So
doing.
For me,
you could understand everything you said,
and I didn't really struggle a lot either.
I mean, I had subtitles.
No, I didn't. I don't even when I watched it without subtitles when I first saw it, I didn't. The staunch Irish Catholic. Both of
drunk
my,
Irish well, so Catholic.
You genetically can understand.
No. So my great grandmother and family on my mom's side have Irish accents in certain places. And so when he starts speaking really, really fast and he puts it all together and stuff like that, I can understand that because I've grown up around it and things like that. And I've heard people talk that quickly and stuff like that. But there is fun fact, and I'm going to probably steal this from you with the subtitles. When he's talking about getting that caravan, the second fight with his mom, it just says indistinct words.
Yes.
It doesn't. Yeah. So I cannot understand that one.
I struggled to get some stuff for this movie.
Yeah.
I watched a YouTube recap. I watched a YouTube summary and I'm like, there's gotta be stuff. Like I've got a couple things here and there, but like, I enjoyed it. Don't get me wrong. Like, but as far as like world content, like life-giving, life-taking content for us, the audience, I had a hard time pulling even like one-liners and stuff. So like, I don't have much for this film as far as biases.
It's interesting because you, when you and I were texting and I was like, hey, like what lens do you want me to watch this through? And you were like, you know, anything that is just affecting your reality. Yeah. And I've seen this movie more than a dozen times and I rewatched it again and I'm just like, I am struggling to find something this that affects my reality. I mean, I enjoyed it. I love that movie. Yeah.
There's not a lot of, I mean, I guess, well, I don't want to say there's not a lot of depth to it, but like at the same time, there's not a lot about, there's not a lot of relatable things to it that I attach to. What were you going to say?
Well, it's weird because a lot of times, like for example, Gone with the Wind, I had 3 pages of things that we could talk about. And
it's a 4-hour movie.
And, yeah. But not even just that, like each of those things we could talk about for an hour, right? Mm-hmm. This, I have 3 or 4. I think there's enough to fill an episode there, but there's not a lot of meat to the movie, despite this being a dialogue heavy movie. And usually with dialogue heavy movies, we end up getting a lot of truth claims. But this, not a lot of truth claims, but there's a handful of things that are very specific and unique in this movie that I think we could talk about. The biggest one is the opening or like second scene, Benicio del Toro pretending to be Jewish,
talking about religion, talking about virgin birth.
So I
wrote that down too.
Yeah. So the Septuagint scholars mistranslated. This is what his character says. The Hebrew word for young woman into the Greek word for virgin. It was an easy mistake to make because there was only a subtle difference in the spelling. So I looked it up. Alma, A-L-M-A-H, is young woman of marrying age. Mm-hmm. Betula, B-E-T-U-L-A-H, is young woman who has not had sex. And this is referring to Isaiah 7:14. And then he said, of course, they'd be surprised by this. It's not every day that a virgin conceives and bears a son. You look like you're ready to say something.
No, I just agree with you. One, I don't think that, I think he made that up with the subtle differences because it's not very subtle.
No, it's very different.
Very different. Very differently. No, but as soon as I watched it and I was like, oh, well, let me think through some of this stuff. But I have been in that debate with other people of the Christian faith, and some people are very staunch that virgin birth, and some people are like, you know, just a woman that's never had sex before. And so I've heard people go back and forth on that, and I didn't really have any kind of like definitive, well, this is where I stand on it.
I think that there's enough cultural context to conclude that she was in fact a virgin. Yes, the word used is young woman of marrying age. In this culture, typically virgins, but not necessarily. Okay. But then we have that when Joseph finds out that she's pregnant, which it is then his right to
like divorce.
Yeah. And a very public.
It can't be. Yeah.
Right. And he said, I'll divorce you quietly.
Yeah.
Right. So like, this shows his honor in the situation, but also concludes that he was unaware that she was not a virgin, right? So if she wasn't a virgin, it wasn't through Joseph. We can at least conclude that much. So,
and if you're looking at like reoccurring descriptions and stuff when it comes to female, I won't say characters, but female people in the Bible, the ones that are sexually promiscuous are notated as such.
Yes.
It's like, and she was not notated. It's like, I feel like that would be a fact that would be added to the characteristic of that female, being that it was so detrimental at the time. It was so defining for the woman to either be have or had not, or multiple haves or I feel like that would also be something as part of her character.
Yes.
If she was a woman of the people.
Now, why this is particularly important to Jewish people is because Benicio del Toro is talking about Isaiah 7:14, which we as Christians see as a prophetic verse, which is, therefore the Lord himself will give you a sign. The virgin, which is, or young woman, will conceive and give birth to a son and will call him Emmanuel. So even if you say, not a virgin son, but what did the angel say to Mary? Call him Emmanuel.
Emmanuel, God with us.
Right? So even if Isaiah wasn't sure if she'd be a virgin or just a young woman, the gospel writers clarify. So I think there's enough evidence to say that she was in fact a virgin and that she is in fact the woman being talked about in Isaiah.
So you're...
What?
You're anti-Semitic, is that what you're saying? Can I make that connection?
Jews that worship Jesus as the Messiah are co-inheritors of his promise, yes?
I'm just kidding.
Messianic Jews?
I'm just kidding.
If I am anti-Semite for that, well... I'm okay with that.
I love how This is one of the things I wrote down, and this is just where my mind was. First of all, a lot of explicatives in this film. Explicits.
A lot of bad words.
Yeah. Foul language. But I loved how they referred to as male genitalia as Jacob's.
Yeah. Not Gotcha Jacob's.
Yeah, they said that a couple times in this film, and every time I was like, they said it again. I just never heard that before.
Fun little Jacob's fact, song. Bricktop was actually supposed to be Sean Connery.
Correct.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Now, when I learned that and I watched the movie, I was like, this movie would be very different.
That's also in the documentary I watched. He and Guy Ritchie sat down.
That was Alan Ford.
Yes.
He and Guy Ritchie sat down and watched Lock and Stock and Two Smoking Barrels because Sean Connery was wanting to see what Guy Ritchie was all about and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And he leans over. He's like, this is from the documentary. I'll find it. I'll send it to you, Nelson, to link it. He goes, I like this movie. You can't afford me. So that's how Guy Ritchie explains the Sean Connery thing. Was like, I like this movie. You can't afford me. And then steps out of it. So yeah. So he was supposed to be in the role. And then the other guy that came in, Tom Ford, you said?
Alan Ford.
Tom Ford does Tuxes.
I have more facts in this movie than I do biases. When he auditioned for this film, he auditioned for that role three times. The third time, hold on, making sure I'm not confusing this. Maybe it was another character. But anyways, it wasn't until he put on his reading glasses to read the lines, they go, that's our character. So it's when he read the lines, when he put on those big glasses, which were his, they go, that's our guy.
That's funny. I didn't know those were actually his glasses.
Maybe not those specific ones, but Guy Ritchie said when he put those glasses on, that's when he's like, that's our character.
Yeah.
So
that's our Sean Connery. Yeah.
I can't remember if that is the character that auditioned three times for the same role.
Yeah.
But it specifically was that actor, and it wasn't until he put the glasses on. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was fascinating. I enjoy all that stuff. But yeah.
Back to biases. Cut your Jacobs off. Yeah, cut your Jacobs off.
I got another bias for you.
What you got?
This is a line from
the movie
Bald Guy
Snatch.
Statham?
Yeah.
I was going to say.
I just totally blanked.
There's a couple bald guys.
That's what I was thinking.
I was like, Jacob.
Gorgeous George?
I kept thinking Jacob. No.
Jacob Statham.
Jacob's not what you think it is.
Jason Statham has a line. It's hard to make a living in boxing, so every once in a while, you've got to do something that you might not agree with. Sorry. Mm-hmm. So every once in a while, you've got to do something that might not agree with your principles. Basically, you have to forget you have any.
Is this when they're walking in the pig farm?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I was recently in a situation where I was like, I have to make a decision based on my principles about my employment. And it would have been easier to just been like, yeah, I can put up with this and keep doing this. The paycheck's good. But like I had to make a principled decision, and I didn't like doing that. It's so much easier to just be like, I need a paycheck.
Principles trump and paychecks.
It's hard.
It is. I've been there.
Yeah.
That's why I left the church. I'm just kidding.
No. And I felt it was appropriate to announce it in this medium.
I'm leaving the church worker.
Yeah.
I had a line, Bullet Tooth Tony. It's a strong name. It's a good name. He says this, you should never underestimate the predictability of stupidity. And again, this is a simple thing, but I'm like, I clung to that line for sure. I'm like, I couldn't find any fault in that. What do you like? You should never underestimate the predictability of stupidity.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, it throws, because you can never predict how someone's going to be stupid either. It really throws off. Your ability to plan properly. Just, my libertarian biases here. That's the reason why centralized government and governance doesn't work. Mm-hmm. It's because they're like, well, this is the incentive. And if we set it up right, people will do these things. And no, people are way stupider than you can ever predict. And they're going to find, and also way cleverer than you can ever predict. So they're going to find ways around it, or they're going to not understand
it. True.
One of my favorite classic examples was they were overrun with rats in Hong Kong. And so they started paying by the tail. The government's just put a bounty on all rats. We'll pay by the tail. And so the residents of Hong Kong caged some rats and were just breeding them to cut off their tails.
That's amazing.
And then when the governors kind of figured out that this is what's happening, they ended the bounty. And then all these Chinese people in Hong Kong were like, well, I don't need these rats anymore. So they just
let them free. The rats got doubled.
The population of rats increased dramatically.
So then they brought the bounty back.
No. India did the same thing with snakes. They were bounty on snake tails. And so they were just breeding snakes. And then they're like, no, enough of that. And then they had an increased snake population. It's kind of like Reason Magazine has a YouTube channel that, like, Andrew Heaton is the guy that does the videos. And it's like just a example after example after example of the government failing to predict just how stupid people are.
No, well, like, but I wouldn't say that's not stupid.
Hold on, I would say this. It's a mix. The decision by the government was stupid because the people were like, oh, no. Well, if I can make a capital decision on this and make a little extra cash in my pocket.
I agree. Like, the fact that the government's deciding on, like, rodent control, like, I struggle with that. But
it worked in Alberta.
I don't necessarily think that it was a stupid decision to incentivize community working together for a solution. Like, but in that simple synopsis, like, the goal of the community coming together to solve a solution, that sounds great.
Yeah. There's no solutions, like, only trade-offs, Jeff.
Okay. See, like, wait, why do I even try? Moving on.
No. You're right.
Like, what's wrong with them going, okay, like, we have an issue. Let's incentivize or motivate people to work. Like, it's like, I get that people are going to manipulate it. That's our sin nature. Like, people are going to manipulate and screw up the system no matter what we do.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it's wrong for a structured organization. I'm not even going to say government. Any type of structured organization to go, hey, we're going to offer a program. And if you choose to take advantage of it by choice, we'll reward you.
Yeah.
I don't think that's dumb.
I don't like it specifically when governments do it because they do it with tax dollars, which they take from everybody. But business,
they're paying rat catchers for tax money. Yeah, that's a different. Yeah.
Private businesses, it's a little bit different. But then you still have to if a private business is like, hey, we have a bounty on rats, then they're still likely to get the rats in cages right? It's so, like, I
feel like the motive was altruistic, but like that's not the way they.
Great idea, bad execution.
I don't think that's the best solution for the situation.
Sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, I enjoyed that line of stupidity.
It was great.
I resound to that.
Yeah. I resound.
Well, and if you look at, like, the bullet tooth,
like a gong,
the bullet tooth Tony character comes in so late in the movie, whereas everything has been just so messed up from all different aspects, whether you're looking at Statham's character.
Keep in mind, because Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels was so successful and he's in the trailer, everybody's like, where is he?
Yes.
Why isn't he in the movie?
He didn't come into the third act.
Yeah.
And he came in as basically the cleaner. He's cleaning up
wild
all the
stripper
different
scene.
Wait, and who?
I'd forgotten about that too. Yeah. I was like, I did not remember.
I had forgotten about that too.
I did not remember this scene.
Yeah. So this movie could definitely be PG.
No.
Spoiler alert.
Just edited in some tassels.
It's a Disney classic. It's a Disney classic.
Yeah. This is Aladdin too. It's a sequel to Aladdin.
I missed that scene in Aladdin.
Arabian Nights. Were they rubbing the lamps? Going into the cave? You guys missed it? The rug or the carpet? Like
shag, thick shag, shag carpet.
I can go on for days.
Okay.
Cole, what were some of the biases you had? What were some of the things in this movie that, what were some things that stuck out to you?
I think for me, as I watched this movie, I was introduced to it before I knew Jesus. So there were some things that happened prior to Jesus, like, and my life had not been changed or shifted in any type of way, and my belief system wasn't what it is now. And so looking at it now, I see it more from a children's pastor, children's director, a father, an uncle,
a funcle.
Yeah, all fun. I am a funcle, yes. Yeah. I'm a fun uncle.
Bit of a drunkle.
That is not true.
You could be the man from Funkle.
No, Superman's that guy, and he ruins it.
It's true. That's all true.
I've not seen it. I know it's Henry Cavill.
Henry Cavill's. It's not good.
Don't get me
it's
on not Henry good. Cavill.
And it's a remake.
Oh.
There's
He's
the
got
original.
That new Warhammer 40K thing coming out.
Because
they blew
DC,
like half the budget on
DC
miniatures.
Because DC dropped him, and then he also stopped doing...
That was a good joke, but neither of you are nerdy enough to get it.
What's the one? He also stopped doing...
It's funny because miniatures are really expensive.
The Witcher. He stopped The Witcher.
He stopped The Witcher, which is disappointing because
And then DC dropped him, and so then he.
Well, he didn't stop The Witcher. I think they got rid of him.
No.
Oh, really? You think they dropped
him? No, it's well known what happened, and it's like it made me love him so much more.
It's well known?
Yes.
Then tell us.
Jeff doesn't know it.
Jeff, why did you not know this?
I have not seen.
It's well documented.
Nor am I familiar with The Witcher.
It's well documented, published, and like he became like a nerd icon for it. But basically, he was being idolized for his body. Mm-hmm. He was uncomfortable with this. They wanted to do sex scenes and kissing scenes, both of which he was like, I'm not doing. And then they weren't respecting the material. And like for like the respect of the material was like the straw that broke the camel's back for him. He's just like, I'm not doing this anymore. Mm-hmm. You're not treating me well. You don't like the material. The fans deserve better. I'm leaving.
So to quote Mater, they only liked him for his body.
Yeah, basically.
Basically, yeah.
And basedly, because he's based. Yeah. Super based. But then when he announced that he was leaving, they tried to, the female director tried to run like cover and say it was because, it wasn't even, she didn't try creative differences. She said it was because he's sexist and wouldn't work for a woman. And then like other people were like, no, actually he was really great around the set.
Yeah.
So, I believe Hemsworth has taken over. Liam Hemsworth,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
Chris
is your but brother.
Interesting.
It made me like what's his name,
Henry Cavill,
so much more.
Yeah.
So he's a jacked nerd,
but he's not great in Funko.
No,
but it's not him. It's the whole thing.
The movie doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
But he's a great director. He's a good actor. He's a great guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's like very very conservative values guy.
I love that.
And so
great Clark Kent.
And I'm going to be watching.
Why the heck did they drop him?
I'm going to be keeping an eye on his career.
Yeah, Henry Cavill.
I want
great.
Good things for him.
So back to what I was saying.
Yeah.
From the lens
what movie
that
is this?
Snatch. So from the lens that I watch it now, in comparison to the lens of, like, I remember when I first watched it. Like I was throwing it at like all my buddies. You got to watch this movie. I would. I'm not taking this to on Sunday morning and going, oh, hey, dude, you got to watch this
you
movie.
You lose your job for that.
Yeah, but teenagers are different, man. Like,
yeah, this isn't even going to be, for teenagers, what we see in this movie isn't even going to be new.
No, I mean, what I mean is, like, your friends, who were also Christians, saying you should watch it, right?
No, I wasn't a Christian when I watched it.
But your friends mostly were, weren't they?
No, half okay. I like half and half.
I'm sorry, I misunderstood the example.
Weekends were not Christian, let's just put it that way.
I misunderstood the example because I thought it was like your Christian friends that were recommending it, and for you it was like
I just found this movie randomly at a Best Buy.
Yeah,
and I saw Guy Ritchie, and I was like, I've never seen a Guy Ritchie movie. I'll give him a shot.
I think a lot of Guy Ritchie movies are hard to recommend.
Yeah,
and we'll get to this at the end of the episode,
gentlemen. Hard to recommend.
Yeah, but it's very, very well done.
A lot of vulgar language in it.
Yeah,
I think from that lens though, like. I enjoy it probably more for the nostalgia of it all,
mm-hmm.
And where this movie caught me in my own life, per se. I mean, to be honest with you, before you and I had talked about me coming on and doing this podcast, I probably hadn't watched this movie in a decade.
Mm. Okay. So it's a dramatically different time
fresh
in your life.
It's a dramatically different time. So I'm watching it more with fresh eyes. And interestingly enough, I enjoyed it for what it was, but... There were parts of it last night as I watched it. I'm like, man, that didn't need to be in there. That set of the way you said that with those words and all that type of stuff, you could have said it in a more less vulgar way. Sorry, not a more, a less vulgar way and got the same point across.
But that I would say also though that edge and roughness and kind of imperfection.
Mm-hmm.
Of the movie is throughout the style, like it's in the direction, it's in and in a way it works really really well.
Yes, it does. And I'll say this,
and it's actually because he's gotten so much more polished as a director that a lot of his stuff has gone downhill.
Yeah, and I will say, like, if the Thanks. Things that I saw last night from my current life perspective would have been. The things I'm like, oh, you could have been less vulgar. You didn't need to have that scene. You didn't need to have the naked girls on the playing cards when you're talking about the fight and all that type of stuff. If that stuff had changed originally when I saw it and whenever it was, I probably wouldn't be sitting in this chair talking to you about how, like, how much I enjoyed it. Because when I was, 20, 19 years old or, you know, I was pretty new in my Christian faith at that point in time. So I was kind of like on both sides of it, playing both sides of it a little bit. And so things like this, I was kind of like leaning back into previous parts of my life going, oh, I'm going to dip my toe back here because this seems really enjoyable. I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, looking back at it now, 38 versus 20, I'm not going to let my son watch this movie right now. I mean, he's only 16 months, but not anytime soon.
I don't think he'd appreciate it yet anyway.
probably not. Well, he doesn't appreciate you him. Many
let's
things.
Let's not speak for him.
It's one of those movies that, like, if you did clean up that stuff,
it wouldn't be as effective as it is.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Clockwork Orange suffers from the same thing, right? Which is, yeah, like, I can't recommend it because of the content, but if you cleaned up that content, the message doesn't deliver.
It doesn't do what it does.
See, and that's where you and I, we don't have to rehash, like, I disagree. Like,
what?
No.
With
Clockwork Orange, like,
oh, okay.
I feel like there's good messages in Clockwork Orange that I feel, I never wrote a movie, yeah, like, that could be reintroduced in a different way or shown a different way that could still impact. I don't think.
Can I push back with a recent example?
Yes. Just give.
Sure.
But from a Christian perspective, and this may contradict something I've said previously, like, but from a Christian perspective, like, I don't think we have the inability as humans to not convey an emotion. Like, I don't think we can only show specific emotions if we show wrong things. Like, I think we have a way to convey emotion without actually having to show the sin.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's impossible. It may just not be entertaining, but if you're doing a movie specifically for a motive, then maybe you're not going for entertainment and maybe it should be a different format. So I think there is some, like, from a Christian perspective, I don't think there should ever be a reason you should show nudity, sex, or for even me, like, I think violence from a faith perspective isn't necessarily needed for most things, but from on the entertainment level, specifically entertainment, I think there's different values there.
Yeah. I don't even think it's necessarily an issue of, like, the cultural values of the director. A criticism that you and I share of a movie that I liked but you didn't, Children of Heaven, is that it feels like an Islamic Christian movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? And I think when you put the kid gloves on as far as the ugly side of human nature and worldly values, when you put those kid gloves on, it does take away from some of the impact that message can have.
I would agree with that.
And yeah. So I think that sometimes, I don't think it works for every movie,
right,
but there are movies where, because they chose to take the more vulgar approach, it works better. And then there's movies that, because they chose to take a family-friendly approach, it doesn't work as well.
Now, could you add heaviness to Children of Heaven, but still make it viable for what modern Christianity would say, this is a movie that all Christians are able to see? Like, could you make Children of Heaven heavier, but not making it vulgar? Like, is there still room there to wiggle?
I think with that movie, the message trying to be conveyed, there's not only no need for it, like, no place for it. But, like, when we're
talking, you just said that there was a lacking there when it came to, like,
I think that in that movie it works, but
withholding.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. But then we talk about, like, a lot of Christian movies in the US, like,
God's Not Dead.
Well, what's one of the
Fireproof,
for example. Fireproof takes kind of kid gloves to some pretty heavier issues.
Yeah.
And if you're an adult, you can piece together what's going on, but, like, teens could also benefit from seeing the message of that and understanding explicitly the message of that. And they put on such kid gloves that, like, it really cheeses the movie.
Yeah.
You know, because they're trying to talk about something that's complicated, and they're trying to be so delicate with it that it, whereas, like,
all the dialogue's in King James Version. So, like, that's also very difficult to understand sometimes.
But, like,
Kirk Cameron, sorry.
One of the things that we liked about Gone with the Wind is how they talk about very, very explicit things in such coded language that a kid's going to not catch it and an adult's going to catch it. And it's, like, good. Like, they do it right that way. Yeah. You know what I mean?
It feeds into both markets.
Yeah.
Like, it meets both markets.
Yeah. Right? And so I feel like
audience,
a criticism that we share of Christian movies is, like, they try to soften it up too much. And I think with this movie, again, with Clockwork Orange, because they don't soften it, because they go really hard in the paint, I think it helps, like, it helps give a message to the movie and a theme and an idea.
Well, and I think also, like, you know, as we're talking here, and I think through some movies are so overly vulgar that they're just not good to watch. Weirdly, the vulgarity of this movie works for the greater story that they're trying to tell. I mean, absolutely. We're talking about unlicensed underground boxing in warehouses across Great Britain.
Yep.
We're talking about, as they use in the movie, pikies, but more in America, you would know it as gypsies, which both are derogatory in their in nature. I know someone that's of Romanian descent, and he hates that phrase.
Yeah, in fact, actually, here's just like common slur that we have in American English. If somebody cheats you out of somebody, you're like, I got gypped.
I got gypped, yeah.
That just means I got gypsied.
Yeah.
It's like if somebody like did your accounting and balanced your taxes, it's like, yeah, I got Jewed.
I think...
I mean, I have heard that phrase, yes.
Yes, but I think the setting... Yeah, but that's
negative. I was saying it's a good thing because there's such good accountants.
Good accountants. But I think for the setting... Are you inferring
there's negative aspects of the Jewish culture, Jeff?
Got silent.
Who's the anti-Semite now? Still me.
No, for me, if I can pull myself back and that's the thing I do love about movies.
Yeah.
Is that sometimes I use them as an escape. Is it the right thing? Probably not all the time, depending on what the context of the movie is. But if we were to take it and soften this movie and put kid gloves on, you can't put, it's bare knuckle boxing. There's no gloves.
Kid gloves.
There's no kid gloves on bare knuckle boxing, but, within the setting and all that, I think it fits the setting perfectly well. A lot like you were talking about Fight Club earlier.
Yeah.
Where there are parts that are pretty deep rooted in what Fight Club's about as a whole.
And if you cut it,
the movie doesn't work. Fight Club doesn't hit if you're not talking about consumerisms in the vulgar way in which they portray it.
Yeah.
And sometimes if you really look at consumerism, it can get to that vulgarness for people.
Yeah.
Whether it be Christian or non-Christian or whatever your belief system, the love of stuff
is
pretty vulgar. It can get in the way of a lot of things, regardless of belief systems, of moving forward in life, debt, all the things you can talk about. Clutter, hoarding, all the different things because stuff.
Yeah.
But if you take the vulgarity out of the context that it was originally written for, it won't hit. It won't be as effective. It wouldn't be on the top 250.
Right. Absolutely.
So.
Here's the hoping. Just kidding. The language didn't bother me in this one. I feel like
they were speaking English.
We've probably watched European movies already in this film, like in this 250. This isn't the first European film we've watched.
No, we did Seventh Seal.
I'm talking like, okay, but like American English speaking or like non-dubbed. Like, have you ever watched a movie?
Clockwork Orange.
Okay, so the language didn't bother me because, like, I know language is seen through a different filter in Europe. It's like, for me, it's just like, okay, just culturally, like, they throw the F-bomb around a lot more than we do. Same with Australia. Lindsay started, started for a while now. She likes reading novels.
Mm-hmm. Schindler's List. Star Wars.
Schindler's List.
Star Wars is British accents.
Isn't American?
Paths of Glory.
Schindler's List is not American.
That doesn't take a place
in Braveheart. Barely Catholic, speak with American accents.
Gladiator.
Gladiator, they speak with American accents. Das Boot.
It's African.
Das Boot.
Metropolis.
Okay, thanks, Nelson.
Metropolis
is a large list.
So language, though. Let's talk about language for a little bit. I don't know if there's anything here, but let's go dig in a little bit. Crossing borders, not just like
We're going to talk about the migrant crisis, okay.
No, but like the sensitivity to specific words, how it evolves in different regions.
Like in Australia, is not offensive.
Mm-hmm.
And basically everywhere else in the English-speaking world, it's super offensive, which is why I had to quack it out.
Lindsay started reading European, like she likes reading European and Australian authors, and they use the F word and other words quite profusely.
Yep.
But and not necessarily in any derogatory way, which is like, it's just a common knowledge. Where like common language is like, bloody, bag of chips. Like bloody's in there.
And bloody's offensive, but also like so commonly used that it's not really offensive. Right. Mm-hmm. So just, but then here it's like, that's not even a thing.
Yeah,
like,
I got a bloody sock because I stubbed my toe.
Lindsay and I, we've started watching a lot more British TV here. And just, I think because they dropped the F-bomb a lot, like I've almost become numb to that when it's said in a British accent. So I guess that's the point I was getting to. Is like, I'm just... My mind kind of code switched, like, okay, they're not American. They use this more, like, it's less. Offensive over there.
The cultural norm is different. But it's
more prolific over there.
Did you know that Ohioans swear more than other states?
Other Ohio.
How do they know that?
I listen to a lot of secular comedy.
How do they track that?
I kind of just tune out curse words now.
How do they track language then? Like that stat you just said, like, I find that fascinating.
Yeah.
Well, I would love to know that there's someone tracking them. Like, how do you, like,
they probably
AI
set up a microphone. It's
taking over the world.
Set up a microphone and just like,
they
okay.
just, yeah, they just yeah. ask the NSA.
There's currently like seven microphones in here and three of them are what we're talking
hey,
into.
Hey, NSA, which state swears those? I'm like, oh,
and this
Ohio.
Is why we record in Michigan. Yeah.
Easy.
So
it's a great state.
Ohio also has the least regional diction. So there's newscasters that come to Cleveland to get rid of their regional accents mm-hmm. before they go on to other cities.
It's not wrong. I've been told I have a different accent than the people around here. I've been told I have a Southern Michigan, Northern Ohio accent. I don't even feel like I have an accent.
When I first moved here, I had a thick Canadian accent and I had to work really hard to get rid of it.
So why would you want to get rid of it?
Well, because the reason I had to work hard to get rid of it was because at the time I was trying to get a job teaching American accent at a call center. Because it was like easy work for English speaking people mm-hmm. in Latin America. So I had to get rid of my Canadian accent. And like, it just never came back except for when I drink or I'm around my cousins.
Or both together. One of my sisters.
Well, the second always happens with the first.
One of my sisters growing up, like, was like, she hated country music, like hated anything that was like country Western.
Yeah.
A couple years later after high school and stuff, she ended up moving down to Tennessee and stuff. And
now she's a singer in Nashville.
No. Very quickly though, she brought
became
on
a meth addict. Sorry.
She brought on a Western, like Southern accent.
Yeah.
And she's lived back in Ohio for years now. And it still comes naturally. Like, it's just crazy. Born and raised in Ohio.
Yeah.
Lived just a couple years in Tennessee. And now living back in Ohio, she still has her Southern accent. Yeah. I think it's fascinating.
Yeah.
Like, I love accents. I think I've watched a lot of speech coaches and stuff mm-hmm. like how, like, actors and stuff can, like, breaking down of different regions of that. I find that fascinating.
I will say, to my point, I'm kind of taking us back for a second. I was just, as we were talking, I was thinking about something, talking about like you listen to non-Christian comedians and like,
yeah.
you know,
he's not a Christian.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you're coming on Sundays though.
I'm there a lot for somebody that doesn't
play in the band.
Yeah.
But equal opportunity.
I look back at my upbringing, and this is not a slight on my upbringing whatsoever, but vulgar cussing, I can't even. It's been so ingrained in my life and in part of my life. I can't tell you the first time I heard a cuss word. I had a conversation with someone today that told me the first time they ever heard someone say a cuss word.
And could you cuss in front of your parents as a kid?
No, but I cussed in front of all my friends.
Well, I could tell you the first time I heard my mom curse specifically.
I don't know.
I couldn't tell you the first time I heard my dad curse.
Because it was going on way before you were there?
No. Well, yeah. But also, it's like my dad just like one day he started cursing in front of me.
Yeah.
But it was always like when mom's not around.
Yeah.
Like even still he does that. And I'm like, mom knows you swear.
Mom
Dad.
Knows you swear, yeah.
So
they both listen.
I want to have it this real like so yeah, your household, like
my dad
they did define that these words you can't say.
Yep.
But in your house it was common knowledge. Like there was a defining go like these are still bad words.
Yeah, my mom was not my mom is not one to cuss, and I'm not trying to throw my father under the bus here, but I think the scene from the Christmas story where he has to eat. I said, where did you hear that word? And I heard it from my dad five times a day.
Yeah.
My dad would admit to this. The F-bomb is a common vernacular in his sentence structures.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, for me, I almost, we talk about your Christian walk, your Christian faith, something you struggle with. Language is something I've gotten better at, but
it's fucking hard.
Bluey helps. If you know what Bluey is, you know what I'm talking about.
I'm honestly back and forth on it because like, if you look at some of the things that Jesus said, like obviously he wasn't saying American swear words.
Sure.
Like
it was vulgar for his day.
He did say some things that were, they were offensive.
They were
of the
common tongue
of the people he was talking to. So like, it's like, I used to be like, I can't say as a Christian, but now I'm just like, there's some things I'm like, this is I don't know where I stand on language. Like I do struggle with like is it appropriate?
The thing that I always come back to is what is your intentionality behind the use of the word
offensiveness
to make somebody laugh? Every time
I want to offend people.
If you're using it in a negative connotation to put someone down, I'm not on board with that. If you stub your toe and it comes out, I give you way more leeway on it.
What if I say it to insult somebody that's not there to make a third person that is there laugh?
That would be slander and gossip. But if I'm
what
the
if
one
it's
laughing,
still true, though?
If I'm the one laughing, I'm going to have to pray for forgiveness.
Right. If a tree falls in the woods and Nelson cusses, so, and it makes someone laugh.
I don't curse in front of my kids. I think that's class. And it's not even because like
not gonna say that.
It's not even because I think it's bad to do it. I just don't think it's like it's trashy to curse in front of kids. Is my attitude about it.
I have people in my life that think it's hilarious when their 2-year-old drops an F-bomb.
Listen, all three of my kids have gone through a point where something that they say, like Sophia, when she used to say thumbtack, it sounded like she was saying that. Hilarious, right? But like she didn't learn that from us. Like that was just her mispronouncing. And all three of our kids have gone through phases where like they mispronounce something and I'd make them say it because I think it's hilarious. But I don't swear in front of my kids. I do, like Jen and I will curse when the kids aren't around. Like we call our dog Whiskey, we call her dumb because it's funny. I don't have any problem with strong language, but strong language said in anger takes a different tone.
Yeah.
It hits different. So I don't use strong language in anger ever. It's always ever because I think it's going to be funny. That's basically the only reason I say just about anything.
And I grew up with people using strong language in negative tones like that.
Yeah.
And it is an Achilles heel for me, man. If I get frustrated, I might not say it, but I've thought it.
Yeah.
I've thought it. If you see my face frustrated, there's a good chance a not good word is in my head.
My daughter every week.
And you work with kids, so that's a lot.
Yeah. It's actually not as much as you think it is.
Every Sunday before church, my daughter will go get a bag of Sun Chips to share with her friends. And for a week,
why we have Sun Chips in the 2-year-old room?
She's keeping me in business. For 1 week, I thought it would be fun to teach jazz. For 1 week, I thought it'd be fun to teach my daughter how to, when she pulls her hand out of the bag to give a chip to someone, instead of getting a chip, she would flip the bird.
You taught her to flip the bird?
It didn't catch on. And then I immediately started to go, maybe I shouldn't do this. But there was multiple days where I'm like, Jess, put your hand in. And then when you pull it out, go like this.
Because it's hilarious. And then
the closer she got to understand, I'm like,
Jeff,
never mind. Let's not do this. So it never happened. But like, yeah, I thought that I would have found that funny. So, but there is an age where it goes,
so
okay.
I have a whole email box full of letters from the 2-year-old room classroom of parents wondering why I'm giving people the bird. I'm going to send it your way.
Who?
Exactly. I'm kidding. I'm totally kidding.
We quacked out the name. Don't worry.
Yeah.
Why were you just not telling me about those?
I'm kidding, Jeff. I'm just messing with you.
She did it!
So Jen likes to flip me off when she thinks the kids can't see if I've been teasing her about something. And then
one day Sophie's like, Dad,
what does this mean? And she's like... like Mr. Bean. And I explain, and she's like, why does mom do that? And I was like, oh, because it's funny. I was like, don't ever do it to people because people won't understand. Yeah. She does it to me because it's funny for us.
Yeah. It's an inside joke.
Yeah. Corridors.
Yeah, exactly.
There was a new kid that used to point with his middle finger, and it was hard for me to not acknowledge it. I was like, okay, let's just move forward. Don't say anything. But he would point with it, like comments, like it was just.
There is.
Yeah.
I have a picture of my son from his first Easter. And my wife took him to Target.
I've seen this picture.
And it was one of the best pictures. He's giving me this big cheesy grin. And he's looks like he's itching his face. But he's also just giving you the bird. Mm-hmm. And so I get it. And it's a great picture. So we have this like group family album on our iPhones. And I upload it. And my dad's first comment is, why is your son giving me the bird? And I was like... You would see that, Dad.
Immediately.
And now I go to my grandma's house for Christmas, and there's the picture on her mantle, and there's the picture of my other grandma's house
grandma,
on her mantle.
Does your grandma know?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so everyone's...
And my mom's got it in her office, and it's like, it's the best picture of my son.
Because it is subtle.
It is very subtle. It is very low-key.
But it's there. It's definitely there.
But it's definitely there.
It's
fantastic.
There's a beautiful framed painting that my daughter made for me years and years ago that's in our house. It used to be on the fridge, but now it's framed and on the wall. It's a pumpkin,
mm-hmm.
and it says, for you, Dad, but she couldn't spell, so she abbreviated, and it's just F you, Dad. It's just a pumpkin, it says F you, Dad, and it's on the wall, I love it.
Now it's in a frame.
Yeah.
Frame for life.
I mean, okay, you guys were a little bit of a bunch, but I love this one. It's come up multiple times on just Facebook and meme and stuff, like, a teacher asks a student to draw what your parents do for...
I know this one.
For careers, for a career thing. And so there's this picture of... what looks to be, from a child's drawing artistic abilities, a woman on a stripper pole with people handing her money.
Throwing money at her.
Yep. There's dollar bills. There's a woman on a pole in like a stage setting. And then so she's like, hey, we got to talk about this. So talks to parents and stuff. And he goes, I work at Home Depot and I was selling people shovels to all these people. It's like they were throwing money at me because like I had shovels and I was passing.
Passing
like,
shovels.
And yeah. So knowing that if you look at it, that's exactly what it is, just mm-hmm. at a child's creative level. And I'm like,
or that mom's a very clever liar.
Oh, that's true. But like, every time that pops up,
or
I'm like,
one's
I
a day
this.
Job, one's not a day job. It's true. Yeah. So
it's true. Both
like
are
Batman.
Right. Both are right.
She's Batman.
She's Batman. Didn't Pamela Anderson do a movie called Stripperella, which was like a crime fighting stripper? I've never seen it, but I'm pretty sure it exists.
No comment.
Not linked below.
I'm going to Google this on my wife's school computer.
So this is not a bias. This is a directorial thing that I absolutely hate. And,
specifically in this movie.
Yeah.
Okay.
And when I point it out to you, you guys will start to see it more and more, and you can hate it too. I hate when a conversation cuts between obviously minutes apart, but we're supposed to pretend it's not because the sentence continues. Mm-hmm. So they're in front of the caravan, and Al, I think his buddy, Jason Statham's buddy, says,
Tommy
says, yep. What's coursing? And Jason Statham says, hair coursing.
Mm-hmm.
And then it smash cuts to inside a vehicle driving. So they're now well away from the caravan. They set two lurchers, their dogs, before you ask. And then immediately cuts again. They're now walking in a field on a hare, and the hare has to outrun the dogs. I hate this. It absolutely ruins my suspension of disbelief because this doesn't happen. I don't like Jeff. You and I have gone places before. We've never started a conversation of like, wait, hold this, and then like 5 minutes down the road, like, all right. And so I was saying, like, people don't do that.
But
and I hate it.
I understand what you're saying, but that seems kind of pivotal in the grander scheme of the movie itself because. It's a real life version of the coursing of the hare. Whereas Tyrone is the hare and both of Bricktop's guys are the lurchers. And in the scene with Jason Statham and Tommy, they bet on the lurchers catching the hare and they don't catch the hare. The hare gets away.
Yes.
But Tyrone does not get away and he's the hare in that lurchers versus hare coursing. And no, so it's a parallel run.
I get it. It's brilliant as far as like storytelling.
Yes. I understand your frustration with it.
I hate that thing, and I don't know what the name for this directing thing is. You see it a lot, especially in heist movies. It mm-hmm. happens so much in heist movies.
Is that when they're describing the actions that are happening? Like, okay, so it's like, I don't quite know exactly what scene you described. But like, New Girl does it, Family Guy does it. Like, well, they'll say something, and then they'll show it, and then they'll go back.
No, it's different.
You're describing, okay.
What I'm talking about is
they're
when
mid-conversation.
It's either... When the scene cuts while somebody's talking or between sentences in a conversation,
yep.
And suddenly we've changed locations.
The same two characters.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So like, for example, you might see it where I ask you a question, the scene cuts, and now you and I are at the bar and you're answering the question.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing. I hate that because it's like that's not how conversations happen. It for me, it really breaks the...
gotcha. Continue or like flow?
Yeah, but like the able to allow myself to believe this world. Oh. You know what I mean?
It's just so it's not just showing things out of order. It's like many movies will like previously on or like 2 weeks ago, 2 weeks or 2 weeks.
No,
later,
it's just how did we get to this bar? Why weren't they talking? Why weren't they having the conversation while they were on the way to the bar?
Going to the bar. Gotcha.
Like, why did he wait until now to answer the question?
I got you.
It ruins the believability for me.
I think it's because it's almost an instant. Like, so I think it through, like, so Ted Lasso. You've seen Ted Lasso.
Who's it?
Ted Lasso. Apple TV Plus.
Football?
Football.
That British guy that comes over and coaches in the AFL.
Football is life.
Or backwards. But anyways, so Ted Lasso starts a joke with Beard in season one, and it doesn't resolve till season two. But because the callback happens eight episodes different,
you forget it,
and then you're like, oh, and then
what
hits.
Was the joke? Which one?
Oh, what is the sound a British owl makes? And then at the time, Beard's mad at him, so he's backing away. He's like, oh, you're walking away from me. But I think you're talking about the same thing because it's kind of a callback, but it's instantaneous. Whereas, like, I can look at Beard and Ted and go, I can understand the concept of Beard's mad at Ted because Ted's not going to cut Roy Kent from the team or whatever. And so he's backing away and then he doesn't give the actual answer till the second season. Whereas you're literally like, no, it doesn't make sense why we're doing this because you could have just, You could have resolved this conversation in the previous scene.
Why were we just sitting quietly for this 5-minute train ride?
Yes.
And then we sit down and order our beers, and now you're answering the question.
Now you're going to answer. Yeah, I get what you're saying, and I can see that frustration.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
I think it would
cure my autism even if they just, like, I'll tell you when we get to the bar.
Like, yeah. Like, that give you some resolution, like, for the future, like,
okay,
happening.
So that's why they waited and like a half hour.
And maybe it's a cutscene that they cut, you know? Deleted scene.
No, it's just a bad.
I don't think that's ever bothered me.
It's a thing that it's to move the plot quicker. That's why they do it, right? Because we need to get from here to here. Let's do it during the dialogue. But to me, it just feels like,
instead of driving, you're not driving a scene, you're just driving dialogue forward, and then therefore the scene becomes a new spot, and then you can move to where you need to be
exactly
for the next scene because you're in that environment, whereas there might have been a 45-minute ride in between to get from here to there within Great Britain, but they want you to just fast forward to this place. And I get it.
Yeah.
It's probably a content.
I think with Guy Ritchie, in this specific example, especially after you explaining kind of like the how it's being used in the moment as an analogy.
Yeah.
I can give it a little bit more. Like, I don't mind if they were just cutting back and forth to what's happening with Tyrone.
Yeah.
But because they, like, went through three different scenes.
Yes.
That's what it's like. It totally breaks the illusion for me.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
About to break your illusion.
Aw.
What did I do to deserve that?
Just you wait.
Clearly, fixing fights is wrong.
It's going down on
the fourth. It happens probably a lot more than what we, like.
Probably does.
Yep.
Also, clearly, breaking your contract is wrong. But which is wronger?
Mm.
Because Brad Pitt's character is under contract to fix the fight and doesn't.
But if you're doing something corrupt to beat something that's already corrupt, do the two corrupts double negative?
That's my question.
Which
is wronger? Is it? It's obviously wrong to commit fraud.
Right.
But if you have a agreement to commit fraud, and you break that agreement,
I think it's wherever the first domino is. Mm. Not to justify any of it. Like, I hope I'm not having to make these decisions.
But I think sin is sin is sin.
Right.
And there's no what's worse and what's.
But in this world, though,
if
you have to play the same, because, like, the people that are making those contracts are corrupt. So if you've got to, you either got to be a puppet or get on their level.
Yeah.
And I think that's just what he did. Like, he played the game versus being played by the game.
He reverse committed fraud.
Yeah.
Which, like, it's kind of like movie, No Honor Among Thieves.
Right. In this movie, I think he made the right choice.
And then he covered
his
reality,
tracks. I think it's a harder decision. I think, like,
technically, he was still fixing the fight. He was just fixing the fight
for himself.
In his own
for
way.
Himself.
Right. Yeah. Which, is it not, it's not fixing if there's no competition, though, right?
Yes.
He was going to win
definitionally.
He was going to win either way. So, like, the outcome was going to be the same.
No, but then it's an honest fight again.
Correct.
Yeah. So, double negative.
Yeah.
That's what I said.
He defrauded the fraudsters, which, you know, another Jason Statham movie, The Beekeeper.
I have not seen it. Have you watched it, Nelson?
It's about this guy that's in.
I've seen previews.
I wasn't going to watch it, but then our previous guest, Hunter Shearer, we had him on for The Thing.
Which one?
The Thing. Kurt Russell?
Yeah.
Big China Bull, Little China.
Yeah.
And it's Kurt Russell.
I know. I'm just. Did you
get
that?
The other number two.
Kurt Russell. Big Trouble in Little China.
Oh, Big Trouble in Little China. I thought you said Big Shirt. I don't even know what you
Big Trouble in Mangina.
Speaking of Russell.
That's not it. That's not it.
So why did I bring that up? Yeah, he gave it 1,000 out of 10, or something like that, or 1,000 out of 100. So I watched it. It's like a 3 out of 5 dumb action flick, but it's basically Jason Statham is a very competent secret agent who hates theft. And that's about it. You've got the plot of the movie. Now.
I don't think I've seen a lot of Jason Statham movies.
A lot of the times he's
the same guy.
He hates fraud.
He hates fraud. He hates theft. He hates bad things that happen to good people.
Yeah.
He has one energy level.
Hates having hair.
Like,
I assume. I'm not really sure how Meryl Plaid and Brawley
works. I'm not a huge, like,
Jason
I don't think
Statham.
I dislike him, but he's like, he's not one that always, he's not an actor that's always like, oh, this movie's great, but did you see Jason? Like, he never stands out, but he never, like,
he's Mark Wahlberg.
You know he's there.
He's like Mark Wahlberg.
Yes.
My buddies, I remember, it's like, we see like a Mark Wahlberg movie. I go see one. He's like, hey, what'd you think, man? I was like, it's a Mark Wahlberg movie. If you like Mark Wahlberg, you'll like that movie.
That's also true of every other acting Wahlberg.
Yeah. No, you're not wrong. I mean, like, the one he just came out with on Apple TV, like, my buddy, I watched it because it was like the family man or something like that. And classic Mark Wahlberg espionage. Bad guy, good guy, like I saw everything coming from a mile away. It was a good Friday night, end of the week. Don't have to think about it.
Yeah.
Eat some pizza, drink a pop, and you're good to go. And my buddy, you know, back home texted me, he's like, what'd you think? I was like,
I thought it was
do
garbage.
You like Mark Wahlberg? He's like, yeah. I go, you'll love it.
You'll love it.
That's also true of Stallone.
And that's not a knock on Mark Wahlberg. Like, if you find your niche within film and you can make millions of dollars doing it, do it.
More power to you.
Yeah.
I enjoy those movies, but like, they do seem to have mm-hmm. kind of like a less.
What would you say as an actor that is absolutely not true of?
Johnny.
No.
Depp.
Lincoln.
Oh, Matthew yeah.
Matthew McConaughey?
Yeah. No, Neil Diamond.
I can't think of his name off the top of my head.
Steve Carell.
I know it's not Neil Diamond, but that was the actual first thing that came to me.
Neil Patrick Harris.
No, it's not Neil NPH. Diamond.
The movie Lincoln?
Yes. Yeah. It's.
Greta Thunberg.
No. You guys are killing me right now.
I should have said, who's the guy that did the Lincoln commercials?
Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah. Oh, you already made
Daniel
that
Daniel Day-Lewis.
Yeah, why did I say Neil Diamond?
I have no clue.
Daniel Day-Lewis.
Daniel Day-Lewis plays a different character, figuratively and literally, every time he does a movie.
Dramatically different. That movie came out roughly around the same time as Abraham Lincoln Vampire Slayer.
It did.
Which was better in a lot of ways.
Okay, so funny story. I'll give you a Lincoln funny story because I'm a big Daniel Day-Lewis guy, and I don't know why I couldn't remember the name. But that was the night.
Big fan, Nelson.
That was the night one of the Twilight movies came out.
Ooh.
And my buddies and I went to go see Lincoln at midnight. We used to do this thing.
And the place was packed with
for Twilight,
girls.
Yes. Yeah. And so we.
That's where you met your wives?
There were 16 theaters.
And boyfriends.
15 of them were Twilight. One of them was Lincoln. And we were the only three people in Lincoln.
That's insane.
So, yeah. I used to do midnight movies with my friends. We go on Thursday nights. This is when I was younger and not married.
I used to go see midnight movies.
Yeah. We did it for like 2 years, every Thursday night.
I did it pre-kids.
I only can really remember one midnight movie, mm-hmm. and it was Transformers 2. My brother and I went and saw it.
Was Shia in that one?
Yeah. He was in the first three.
And the manager of the movie theater was just this really great big fat guy. And
shout out to Doug.
And you know, people were getting a little rowdy, but he had it under control.
For a train.
Harley and I, when we used to, like in high school, like if one of us was going up the stairs, the other one would chase him and slap their like hand between their thighs.
Yeah.
And we call that trouting. Don't know why. Something we did.
Awkward salmon.
We used to call it goosing.
And
that's amazing.
And this manager had a tag that said Trout Master. And Harley and I just thought this was the best thing ever.
Route Master.
Classic dog.
I kind of want to know what that's about.
Yeah. I hope it's slapping men's thighs.
Probably fishing.
I hope it's about slapping men's thighs as they go up the stairs.
Listen, I am a fisherman and I've never heard of Trout Master. I've heard of Bass Master, but not Trout Master.
I believe it's Bass Master. It's a metal band.
Could be.
Catfish Master?
Nope. Not going there. Never mind.
Carp Master?
There's one right in front of you, Jeff, that you should be knocking out of the park right now, but I'm just going to leave it alone. Anyways.
Bluegill Master?
No, it has to do with the movie.
Snatch Master.
There you go.
That's not a fish.
A snatch
of
crab.
Fish. Is a snatch a fish?
Well, I have to leave that joke in from the beginning then.
There's a fish called Snatch?
Red Snatcher.
Red Snatch, yeah.
Oh, it's a red snapper.
You're right. It's red snapper.
I said it was a stupid joke.
I don't know all those.
It is
terms.
A red snapper. It's not. I thought
red
it was
snapper.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a callback to UHF.
Oh, United Hairy Farmers.
Anyways,
do we have anything else on this?
I don't.
I'm
do
out.
Not.
I'm
I,
out.
I mean, I had a little touch on the undercover boxing.
Yeah,
but that's still a thing. The unlicensed boxing still a thing over in Great Britain.
It's great. It's one of my favorite
things. And it's actually not illegal.
No.
It's very legal.
That's the very British thing about it.
Yeah.
Is the licensed, unlicensed boxing.
Wait, you said you're into it. Like, do you follow it?
No. I'm into the fact that they have.
Oh, I mean, you like that it exists.
I mean, like,
you're not familiar
event centers will put on unlicensed boxing matches for like thousands of people, where I don't feel like in America you could get away with that.
No.
I feel like there has to be some type of...
That explains all the teeth loss.
We do here. Dana White has made a killing with it.
Yeah, but it's licensed now. Those are licensed
UFC,
fights. UFC is licensed.
So the difference between licensed and unlicensed fights is you can bet on a licensed fight. So it's the betting on unlicensed
fights. So it's still sanctioned. Like, it's still like, we approve that this is happening.
Yeah, a licensed fight, you can go to
a
book and
bet
on. An unlicensed fight, you can't. And so when you get in with that bookie... then the issues are violence because it's not a state recognized debt.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So it's a, the, yeah.
Wrap up questions, boys.
Fire away.
All right. If you guys don't answer these correctly, I'll cut off your Jacobs.
Wow.
Would you guys
Well, now I don't know if I want to answer them right or not.
Oh, you have to. Would you guys recommend
another one?
This film?
To the right person, yes.
Same. Not as much as I would have recommended it 20 years ago.
Like, I would have recommended it to either of you if you had never seen it before. But yeah. I wouldn't recommend it to just like anybody from church. Like, nope. It'd have to be somebody that, like,
if you can understand the nuance of film.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And you're older than 5.
Right.
Nope.
At least 5. Like, five probably older than that, but at least that.
I'm sticking to the rating system on this one because it definitely it hits its rating.
It doesn't give any. It just says R.
Oh, it's for pirates. That's why I downloaded it.
There's no number
legally.
Jack Sparrow. Yeah.
If you own a parrot, you can watch this movie. Yeah, this isn't going to be a movie I'm talking about to friends. I'm not going to bring it up, but if someone brings it up, they're like, oh yeah, I saw it. It was, I watched it.
It's actually great. You keep going. Okay. The fan turned off.
Okay. I thought the door opened. Okay. But I didn't hate it. It's not one I'm going to bash, but it's not one I'm preaching about and going, hey, everyone needs to watch this. Like it's, I'm not going to be the first one that talks about this film.
Yeah. I think, like I said earlier, I think for me going back and watching this, being like the first time in 10 years, I think it just hit on a lot of nostalgia as I rewatched it after my wife and child had gone to bed. And it was just kind of like that hang out by yourself time, wind down for the end of the night, throw it on. And you're like, oh man, remember when we used to watch these movies in my apartment or like go hang out with the boys over at their house and, you know,
the boys.
That's, and to me, I think it just hits more on the nostalgia feel of it. Like I watched it for this and I probably won't watch it again for a very long time. I don't really have a need to or want to.
I still watch Guy Ritchie movies as they come out.
True, true.
And I would say The Gentlemen is a better movie than this.
Yes, it's more polished.
Is that is The Gentlemen on the top 250?
No.
Okay,
so I need to watch that one.
Because
that's the newer one.
It's not as fast moving.
No.
Okay. And that's the one thing I do love about this movie is how fast it's just like, and the weird thing is it's almost a before its time because of now with 15-second TikToks and all that type of stuff. It's like every second we're going to a new scene. We're going for a new
do you
angle.
TikTok, Cole?
Do I TikTok? Do no, because it's very addicting.
All right, we'll have yours.
I don't have a TikTok.
Below. We created you one.
There's a lot in this movie that, like, I'm sure for its time, a lot of critics were like, "This is bad directing."
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot in this movie that's that way, but it's because of it that it actually like it's so different and so unique and works so well.
Would you put the Fight Club type of editing within this cat, like just specifically the way it's edited. Like
I'd say David Fincher is definitely one of those ones where like, or especially his early stuff, people are like, this guy doesn't know how to direct a movie, but it works really well because he's doing something different.
Specifically the editing, I put in the same.
I think Fincher, as same as Guy Ritchie, I think his editing has gotten more developed and more direct, like
cleaner.
It's a cleaner cut. And if you went back and made Fight Club is what it is. And it is what it is in the context because it's so raw.
Seven as well.
Yes. What's in the box? If Fincher went back and remade Fight Club with the way that he cuts films now, it'd be a different movie. Like if you went back,
it wouldn't be as good.
Yeah. If he cut it like he did in The Social Network, it just wouldn't hit on the same levels as it did when it came out.
Yeah. It's just Facebook because it's cleaner.
It's cleaner. Drop the.
Because
I don't get it.
Because Fincher edits cleaner now.
Yeah.
Cleaner cuts. That's actually why Mark Zuckerberg dropped the. Is because Fincher directs.
Justin Timberlake told him to.
Yeah, because Fincher
directs.
Watch
the documentary.
Cleaner.
This movie's rated R. Would you guys change the rating?
No, I might even make it R-er.
Yeah.
R+.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's not as R as Clockwork Orange.
No, it definitely is not as R.
There's
as
no
Clockwork
sex
Orange.
In this film.
No.
Like, there's no sex. I don't think there's even any kissing in this film. There is just.
I think he kisses his ma.
Okay. There's just the one scene where there's a bunch of naked women
in
the
room.
Topless women.
And the naked playing cards.
I didn't see the playing cards.
You were looking closely.
They were back in the caravan.
I saw the real live ones.
Talking about the situation that they were in between Tommy and
gotcha.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's not sexually explicit, but there is graphic nudity in it.
And it's topless women.
Yeah. And I think you could maybe get, because definitely surpassed the three F words for rated R.
So I think that the
top has to be rated R.
First 5 minutes.
The topless women in that scene, it's entirely gratuitous.
Yeah.
Doesn't
need to be there.
It doesn't develop the like.
No, it has nothing to do.
Introducing Bullet Tooth Tony that way does not need to happen in that context.
What introduces Bullet Tooth Tony is all the violence happening in that scene. Like, it literally adds nothing to explaining who this guy is.
Yep.
So.
That was
so that's the biggest thing that I would change is just cut that.
But it'd still be R.
100% R. I also
violence,
think,
yeah.
I think culturally it's made for a Great Britain European audience. True. It's not made for an American audience. And so, yeah, I think
there's a scene where the one guy graphically describes chopping up a body into six parts and stuff. So like it's
pretty cool.
It's graphic with even in just the dialogue,
which I think for its time was something that was way more graphic in 2000 than it would be in 2024.
Right.
I think you could almost get away with something like this, not on network TV, but you could get away with it.
Nickelodeon.
Exactly. Paid Nickelodeon pay-per-view. Yeah.
I don't have the note in front of me anymore, but, IMDb had something saying that like most deaths in this movie happened off screen. It's like all the violence, most of the violence, all the gore is post action. Posted actually happening and stuff, so I thought that was interesting. This movie came out in 2000. Has it aged well?
I don't know if aged well is the way I'd put it, but I think it would be, if they had brought it out now, I think it would be more, I mean, it's already like a 94 in Rotten Tomatoes. I don't think it would be as critically, because like, it's, what'd you say, 74 in Rotten Tomatoes for the 73 critics?
73 for critics.
I don't think it would be as critically
sloshed.
Yeah. I think that would be a little bit higher, maybe not a lot higher, but I don't think it's, I think it's, and I don't like using this phrase, but I think it's above its time or before its time. Like, I think it
was could, innovative for 2000.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it would fit now perfect in 2024. There's a couple of things that maybe haven't aged well word wise, but
with the film they used and like the technology,
can we get some silence so that I can edit this out? Great.
With the camera technology and stuff that they use, like, it has a dirty feel to it. Obviously, a lot of that is cinematography and a lot of that is angles and stuff. But at the same time, like, it's got a lo-fi type feel to it.
New director trying some crazy shots.
Shot on 35mm.
I like the atmosphere it gives. It was one of my same positive critiques with Fight Club. Like, like I didn't necessarily
and
like the movie Fight Club, but I loved the grittiness of it because not only was it like filtered and stuff, like it just, it was raw. It was lo-fi.
Yeah,
and,
and from what I read, Brad Pitt did not shower much during filming.
Correct.
Yeah.
That was a personal choice. Yeah. They kept asking.
Yeah.
I know.
Please shower. So yeah, I appreciate this movie because it feels timely for a specific time.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't want it to feel modern.
Yeah.
I think the age of this movie currently is nice. I think it's aging well. It looks good for its age.
Yeah.
24 years old.
Gosh,
Nelson, thoughts?
Makes me feel old.
I think that it's aged really, really well. I think that it was as cool as you were saying. It was super ahead of its time. It's also very much of its time, but I think it's aged quite well. I think it still holds up.
Yeah, I agree.
Last two questions, guys. Would this be in your personal top 250?
Yes, it's in my top 25 still.
Okay. Even after your fresh eyes,
even with my fresh eyes, I can.
It's still a movie that
and maybe this
near
is
and dear.
Yes, and maybe this is a knock on my ability to disassociate because I took multiple film classes in college, and so I can look at a film for the art of it, I guess.
Yeah.
Without putting it, I guess it's the easiest way to put it. I can look at it from the art perspective, and from an art perspective, I still think it holds up. So why would I not still appreciate it for what it is? Is it something I'm going to go out and like, oh my gosh, I have to watch this now. I rekindled this love for this movie. I have to watch it every day this week. No, but I can still appreciate for what it is. And it can still hold a place where hold a place in my top 250. I mean, you're giving me 250 movies. Yes, this is definitely going to make my top 250.
Yeah.
I'm not giving you one. It's just a hypothetical.
Yeah.
Cole, please
no,
don't
we
read,
don't have
please
that
don't
kind
read
of budget.
Into that. Jeez,
yes, it would be.
Okay.
It is. I think that I like The Gentleman more. I like Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels less, but this would be my top 250. I might change my mind when we eventually get to that. I might be like, actually, no, this is the better one. But those are the only two in the top 250, in the IMDb's top 250.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's not one of those ones. If I never watch this movie again, I think I'll be fine.
Mm-hmm.
But I appreciate.
But it's not like Clockwork Orange where you would actively avoid.
Correct. If someone was like, hey, let's watch this, I'm like, absolutely, let's put it on. Like, I appreciate it. I like, especially for my first like authentic Guy Ritchie, like quintessential.
I would say this is like, quintessential Guy Ritchie.
I appreciate it. Like I enjoyed it again. And it was a movie series I really like. And then things I appreciate about Fight Club together. Like I saw like Ocean's 11 and Fight Club kind of come together in some different, like I appreciate it. Like it was, I enjoyed it. I would be surprised that after maybe if my list gets into the 400s and 500s and I've like, I don't know, like, I don't know if it would end up making it after watching a lot of movies, but with the amount of movies I've watched and the list that's currently ahead of us, I think it would hold on to my top 250 for a while, but I don't know if it'll eventually stay there for the rest of my life.
I think, again, I think for me, it came at a time of my life where I was just a different person and it just hit me in different ways. So, yes, yeah.
Last but not least, why do you think this is on the top 250?
I think it's a mixture of things. I think a big part of it is just how different Brad Pitt is in this from a lot of his other roles. Despite doing two fighting movies back to back, it's a totally different character. He's incredibly entertaining. He really carries the movie. I think without him, if it had been on Statham's shoulder, like it wouldn't have worked. I think it's because it's such like a, it's like the perfect early Guy Ritchie. It's probably the perfect Guy Ritchie movie. I think those are two big things. Guy Ritchie kind of has a bit of a cult following, which is unfortunate. Like it's disappointing because like half of his movies suck. So as we clarified earlier, so I think those are like the two of the biggest things.
Well, wouldn't that be the reason why he has a cult following? Because like if he's not like a prominent,
that's true,
following in the mainstream.
Fair.
I think that would speak true to your tough criticism on most of his movies.
Yeah.
So if it's only a cult following, that means there's only...
It's kind of like Soderbergh. He has a cult following because some of his movies are just horrible.
Yeah.
But I love all the Ocean's movies that he did.
Yeah, those three are great.
I don't know if he did all three, but...
Okay. I do like the trilogy, though. I think they all felt the same.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, I think Soderbergh fits into that. I mean, they're definitely... Guy Ritchie is not Christopher Nolan, and he's not David Fincher.
Yeah.
That's true. Like, he's a different director.
Oh, but I have here in my notes that he's the same.
I thought over time they mutually became the same person. Yeah.
Hello, Valentine's. You know,
ask me the question again.
Why do you think this is on the top 250? Opinions aside, why do you think it's stayed on there and it's held its place on the top
250? I think it's because it's so eclectic in its own beautiful way. It just offers, I mean, I've seen a lot of movies. I own 400 DVDs. I've seen a lot. There's nothing I've seen, even in the heist genre, that hits on all the same things that this movie hits on. I think a lot of heist movies will tend to stay into that drama thriller action, whereas this has drama thriller action and then comedy, whereas the comedy is dark, but it is a release. Specifically, like I think of the scene... And I'll wrap this up, but the scene when Bullet Tooth Tony's in the bar after the car accident and he gets ambushed by the two guys from the bookie and they have the replica guns and he has the, as he puts it, Desert Eagle .50. Mm. And like to me, it just breaks the tension of what we've just seen with a guy got a sword through his chest in a car accident and they... You know, yeah. And so for me, there's
spoiler alert.
Dark. Well, I mean, if they haven't seen this and it's been out for 24 years, it's on them. But
I was
to me,
just gonna watch it.
But so, yeah, to me, it's
some people that listen to the show don't watch the movies first. I don't understand that.
Nate Bergetsky does a bit on that. He has a bit about The Sixth Sense and he opens it up with, now don't tell me you were about to go home and watch The Sixth Sense tonight. This movie's been out. You've had plenty of time to watch it. I'm going to spoil this movie. Don't tell me you were about to go.
Yeah. I also think, this is maybe my own thing, but I think that the music that goes along fits
it's a cool soundtrack.
So well with each individual scene. That is, you know, like when they're in the fight with Gorgeous George on the front end with the Pikeys and the song Golden Brown comes on. I had never heard of it till I saw this movie, but it fits that. I don't know why, but it fits that scene so perfect.
Song for it.
And so I think for me, it's a culmination of everything and people can just appreciate it. And that's why it's still there. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
For me, I think the thing that stood out the most to me, it was the energy in this film.
Yeah.
Almost 2 hours, but this movie is fast paced. And I feel like the way the movie moved and the way it introduced characters, the way the plot, like, I thought it was a very creative and an energetic way to tell a story.
Mm-hmm.
One that I've not seen identical like this before. Like, it's a unique way. And I think because of that, like, a lot of people have noticed, like, this is a, like, the uniqueness of it. Like,
yeah,
I wouldn't say people would say, maybe it's the cold following, but like, I don't think anyone would say this is the best way to tell a story, but it's unique and it's creative. And for me, like, the word energy just kept coming up. Like, I was just mm-hmm. like, this is an energetic movie. And I loved it. Like, it was just constant ramp up.
I also think that
it was fun.
I think the way that Guy Ritchie fused all the stories and interconnected all the stories at different points, you don't in an ensemble movie such as this, you don't see that. And it takes place in such different environments. So there's, like, you know, the boxing ring, and then there's the camp and all the different environments, and fusing all the stories interconnected throughout the whole thing. You just don't see it like that. Right. And I don't think he's really recreated anything like it since this.
Yeah.
If I've seen all his other movies. So.
Yeah. I was about to say something about Gentlemen, but I guess that'd be spoilers. Each of his crime movies are very different from each other.
Mm-hmm.
So, few housekeeping things. If you're not already a member of the Patreon, please go check us out on Patreon.
Please.
This last Friday, we released our February movie review, which was A Few Good Men. We do a monthly off 250 movies.
Great episode.
Starting this Monday, you'll be able to vote on March's episode. Your options are Church People. I forgot. Church People, Tombstone, or Paddington 2. Go and listen to our Patreon-only episode for A Few Good Men. We haven't recorded that yet, but I'm looking forward to watching that movie.
Oh, and I am going to say this prematurely, but it was a great episode.
And then join us Monday for...
Rashomon.
That's right. We're doing our first...
I don't know how to say it,
Akira
Nelson.
Kurosawa movie.
How do you say it?
Rashomon.
Rashomon.
But I don't know that I'm right. That's just how I pronounce it. But it's our first Akira Kurosawa movie.
I'm going to struggle with words that whole episode.
That's going to be a fun one. It's going to be our first kung fu movie. It's a black and white movie. It inspired a lot of what the Western movies were
Star
like.
Star Wars.
It inspired Star Wars. So I'm looking forward to my... This will be my first Akira Kurosawa movie.
Oh, I've watched them all. You're going to love it, Nels. Yeah, I've not seen any of them.
I was going to say, wait a second.
I do. It's weird because I like kung fu movies, but I've not seen a single one of these.
You've seen all the ones that people use to make based off of it, but you've never
seen...
I don't think I've seen
any kung fu movies.
I watched a lot.
I mean, does Karate Kid count?
No.
Okay, then no. Yeah, I haven't. What about the Three Ninjas?
No. Three Ninjas at Magic Mountain.
It's a great
The
one.
Third one.
Three Ninjas High Noon.
Ooh.
It's high.
Knuckle up.
Yeah. Cole,
yeah.
You were a guest today. Appreciate you being here.
You were our guest.
This is the office. It is my birthday.
It is your birthday. Oh, no. You were a great guest. It was great finally having you here. Like, it's not required, but like, do you want people to be able to reach out to you, or would you rather stay anonymous?
Anemone?
See an enemy? Any final words, I guess, is what I'm asking. Anything you leave the crowds with?
Yeah, no, I'm not really big on social media or anything like that. Final words is...
Read your Bible.
Sure, read your Bible. We'll keep it at that.
I will edit that.
All right, thanks, bye.
Okay. Yeah, bye.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode as much as we did.
If you have found value in what we discussed today, please consider leaving us a rating and review. And don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode.
If you have any feedback or suggestions, we would love to hear from you.
That's right. Tell us why we're wrong.
If you want even more content and ways to engage with us and each other, check out our Patreon page.
By supporting us there, you'll get access to exclusive bonus content and help us continue to create high quality episodes, as well as help pay for our future plans. Links to our social media, merchandise, and Patreon are in the show notes.